Friday, October 30th, 2020. Thank you for joining us today. We have another fantastic show planned for you in regard to our election special and the seemingly horrible planned chaos that's coming our way unless we do something about it. It's kind of an extension of the show from yesterday, or not yesterday, our last show that we did, or maybe it was yesterday. So many things going on that kind of tie in with this overarching discussion that we've been having. And as Whitney pointed out last time, that it's, you know, not your typical election special. It's about what I would argue things that are really important, you know, not the show that's going on around it all. But we're going to talk today about this network of shadowy, shady intelligence companies and all these people that work with them, tied with them, that are tied back to 9/11. And as we just talked about, this is being framed as the new 9/11. And it's very, very relevant to this whole thing. We're going to touch on the more of the extension before of yesterday in regard to the hacks and the way that's being set up and framed and how it's all driving towards what Whitney has been uncovering. So let's get right into it. Whitney, how are you today?
I'm doing well, and I am ready to expose these losers who are clearly planning something awful. So that being said, let's just get into it. So we talked about cyber reason a lot yesterday, so I'm not going to spend too much time on them. But, you know, they put their most important advisors at the top, and we talked about the former CIA official. We talked about the former Unit 8200 commander and former director general of the IDF and the former head of the Boston police at the time of the Boston Marathon bombing, who was involved with a lot of the doomsday predictions and simulation of cyber reason. But we did not talk about this guy, and I really think that it needs to change. So
David DeWalt here for people that are just maybe on the podcast version.
Yes, Dave DeWalt. Sorry about that. So Dave DeWalt is a member of Team 8. If you don't know what Team 8 is, it was funded by Eric Schmidt of Google, who is basically running the Pentagon's modernization policy. And it was set up by a former commander of Unit 8200 named Nadav Zafrir, who also has ties to the billionaire Paul Singer, among other people. And what do you know? It turns out that this guy, we're going to see this this particular council coming up a lot with Barack Obama's national security or cybersecurity councils. A lot of these operatives in this network, they were there. Anyway, what's important here is that this guy was the CEO and executive chairman of FireEye and also of McAfee, which are going to be things that come up time and again. Here it notes that he's a board member at Teammate, Delta Airlines, and some of these other companies, but it doesn't mention that he is the vice chair of Cyber Reason's advisory board. They seemingly left Cyber Reason out, which I think is kind of odd. Mm. It's worth pointing out that on Teammate's board, well, these are some of their investors that we've seen in a lot of the companies and people that we were covering yesterday. Microsoft, Cisco, but also Walmart, Airbus, which has very deep ties to Palantir.
It's interesting how these same entities continue to pop up in this same,
yes.
You know, it's very, and for people out there wondering that, you know, oh, maybe they're just on the same project and it's all the same. These are things that are ostensibly, as far as the public is concerned, a lot of these are separate, but what Whitney is showing you is that they're really not. And that's what's so interesting, is it stands out very on a surface by their ties, but people aren't looking into it.
Right. And again, we have SoftBank here. Remember, SoftBank is a major investor, the main investor in Cyber Reason, AT&T. They'll become important in a little bit. But also, if we go to their advisors, give it a second, we have the former director of the NSA here. What do you know? And also, you know, deputy CISO at Walmart and Santander, one of the biggest banks in Europe, among other high-ranking people all working for what has actually been described even in mainstream media press as like a front for Unit 8200 Team 8. Hmm. By the way, there were actually a bunch of NSA officials that were really mad that Mike Rogers took a job here because they talked about how deeply tied Team 8 is to Israeli intelligence. So anyway, you have this guy, Mike Rogers. You also have Dave DeWalt, not just on Cyber Reason's board, but Team 8's board. And what other board is he on? Another Unit 8200 company called Clarity. And there he is again with Mike Rogers, who's the chairman of the board of advisors. So the former NSA director is here. Okay.
And when you mentioned this bi-national security state, that really screams that to me, the coordination between the two and these agendas they're working, yeah. You know, it's interesting.
And Mike Rogers, who's essentially being paid by a foreign intelligence fronts, came out, was interviewed by NPR just recently saying, oh, I wish we'd done more against Russian meddling, then we wouldn't be in this horrible, chaotic election situation we're in now. If only we'd done more. Okay.
If only we've whittled that down to only 20,000 in memes on Facebook, we would have succeeded. You know? God.
Oh, man. Yeah, I know. So with that being said, I just wanted to point out, because some of those connections with DeWalt and FireEye and McAfee will be important in a little bit. But I wanted to first really dive into an article I did for my site Unlimited Hangout at the end of August of this year, about the same time that Mike Rogers was warning that we didn't do enough about the Russians. Because one thing that a lot of people may have noticed recently is this claim that there is going to be an imminent huge hack, probably a ransomware attack is how they're framing it, on hospitals throughout the U.S. Okay, so that's what makes this company, or not company, it's an organization tied to cybersecurity companies and Microsoft, who we talked a lot about yesterday. This is just so scandalous, and the fact that no one found this, I don't know. I mean, I found it, but didn't get a lot of attention, and I really think it should in light of this, what we're being told is going to be an imminent evil nation state that doesn't like the U.S. or its freedoms attacking the U.S. healthcare system. So as I pointed out here, over the past several months, again, this was a couple months ago I wrote this, 80% of healthcare institutions in the U.S. reported being targeted by some sort of cyber attack, ranging from minor to severe, including phishing attempts and spam. Okay, one of the reasons for the increase in success of this attack was the fact that lots of healthcare IT workers were working remotely, and a lot have been laid off or let go completely. As I point out here, a lot of that has to do with a direct policy enacted by the HHS, the Department of Health and Human Services, who we've talked a lot about in recent weeks and months, especially over, because of the coronavirus stuff and warp speed and all of that stuff. And also there's been a lot of budget cuts, which have made a lot of these hospitals even more vulnerable. So they're, in a situation where they have to do more with less. And conveniently, with this situation that was largely created, by budget cuts or HHS itself, we have a ragtag group of cyber threat intelligence, or CTI, analysts with ties to the U.S. government, Israeli intelligence, and Microsoft, who have volunteered to protect all these U.S. healthcare institutions for free. And they've even directly partnered with the U.S. with the U.S. government to do so, specifically a part of DHS that is in charge of protecting the critical infrastructure of the U.S. that is currently headed by a former top executive at Microsoft. Okay.
What I find most interesting about that is that you're talking about cuts in regards to things that they had previously been warning about. So that seems counterintuitive. But then when you find out that, as you pointed out, their actions set up the necessity for what they're rolling out now, it all kind of comes together. We need to see how these people plan these things out, problem, reaction, solution style, all the time.
Right. Well, it's something to keep in mind too. Eric Schmidt, right, who funded Team8 and is on the National Security Commission for AI and wants the U.S. to adopt all these AI things, he was saying not that long ago, I think it was before the coronavirus crisis anyway, that the biggest push for AI was going to come in the healthcare sector. So what better way to do that than to have some sort of cyber attack happen and be like, look at all these AI solutions we have that you need, so there aren't any more nasty cyber attacks.
Right.
As you'll see, this is a recurring, it just becomes an increasingly likely possibility when you look at things like the CTI League, which we'll be going into here now. So calling themselves the cyber version of Justice League, the COVID-19 CTI League was created earlier this year in March. They described themselves as the first global volunteer emergency response community, defending and neutralizing cybersecurity threats and vulnerabilities to the life-saving sectors related to the current COVID-19 pandemic. And they claim, at least in their most recent report, to have over 1,400 members from 76 different countries.
But How dare they take Justice League? How dare they do that?
I know. Look what they've done. Anyway, that's their real crime, Ryan. Anyway, According to their website, CTI Leak says that they exist to protect medical organizations, public healthcare facilities, and emergency organizations from threats in the cyber domain. They offer their services for free to major hospitals, healthcare, and pharmaceutical companies, as well as U.S. law enforcement and federal agencies. Upon their creation, they sent an open letter to the healthcare community offering to volunteer their time and efforts to mitigate cyber threats and protect our healthcare system.
Nothing is ever
free. Oh, sorry.
Nothing is ever free. As I said, I believe when we talked about this on the show a while back, it's just there's always a tit for tat, there's something that always comes around from these. And that's the same kind of lie they play with lobbyists in this country that, oh, no, they're just giving money because they believe in the agenda. No, there's something that's going to come back from it. So that's when I first read that, I just thought that's just so ridiculous that they're pretending to do this out of the goodness of their heart.
The people that set this up, as we'll see in a moment, are like high-ranking people at very ritzy cybersecurity firms or places like Microsoft. They make tons of money, and they're going to give their super, you know, their services they can charge like hundreds of dollars an hour for to free because of COVID-19. I don't know. As we'll see in a moment, there are a lot of ulterior motives, and, you know, like always, make your own conclusions, but, you know, it doesn't look good. Anyway, even though they frame themselves as being focused specifically on hospitals and healthcare institutions and pharmaceutical companies, they, if you actually look at their website, offer their services also for free to critical infrastructure systems throughout the U.S., including dams, nuclear reactors, and chemical plants. They're here to protect your healthcare and also your nuclear reactors. So that's nice. Anyway, this is particularly concerning given that there is no oversight regarding who can become a member of the CTI League, as you can join as soon as you're approved or vetted by any of the League's four founding members whose conflicts of interest and ties to U.S. and Israeli national security states are pointed out later. And wait until you get a load of these guys. So basically you have to get vetted, approved by any of those four people, and then you're in. And by the way, CTI League's membership is entirely anonymous. No one knows who's in it, and they have over, as I said earlier, almost 1,500 members that are just hanging out in the critical infrastructure systems of the U.S. and also, you know, hospitals and healthcare institutions and things like
so
that.
So you're saying, so they're the members are anonymous. You have to be approved by one of the members in order to get added, a founding member to get added to this, and it's all anonymous, and these people once added have access to our critical infrastructure. Why is that something that makes sense to anybody?
But they're doing it for free because they're clearly all altruistic they just love America, even though one of them isn't an American. The founding guy is Israeli, but they love America and they just want to protect our hospitals, Ryan.
Think about how invaluable the information is that they're holding on to, right? That's clearly something that it seems as a profit motive, right, at the very least.
Yes. Yeah. Could it be used for corporate espionage, blackmail? I don't know. Who knows? I mean, they can get access to a lot of different information this way, but, you know, story for another day. What's worth pointing out too is that CTI League not only expanded to chemical plants and nuclear reactors, but also disinformation campaigns, helping stop the spread of, well, here it says it, the CTI League neutralizes any threat in the cyber domain regarding the current pandemic, which includes disinformation. Okay, so if you have questions, you know, one of their disinformation campaigns was about who could have incited this First and Second Amendment rally in Texas. That was clearly the work of disinfo. It's not like Americans will get together to support their...
Yeah, how dare you protest for your constitutional rights? Right. Fake news.
It must have been the Russians, right? I'm just so clownish. The CTI League works closely with HISAC, the Health Information Sharing and Analysis Center, whose members include Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, and Merck, all of whom are developing Operation Warp Speed vaccine candidates. Also Amgen, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and Athena Health, among others. HISAC's president works closely with DHS, and I believe she actually used to be part of DHS at one point.
That's another example of having the very entity, like Google censoring on YouTube information about the vaccine when they work with Operation Warp Speed. These are entities that are working with the people that have the ability to attack information they claim is disinformation about their products. how incredible the conflicts of interest are almost.
Right.
It's just, it just doesn't, well, it never ends.
Another hack narrative besides the hospitals being imminently hacked, right, is that foreign countries like China or whatever are trying to hack our U.S. vaccine research or U.S. pharmaceutical research, right? It's worth pointing out, as I'll point out later in the report, HISAC, also one of their members, is also Gilead, the producer of remdesivir, which is being, has been touted most of this year as a leading COVID-19 cure or therapeutic or whatever. So interesting to see all of those guys there, you know, and CTI League is protecting them. So just another convenient narrative, I guess. Anyway,
there, I have CTI, just randomly, I've had this on the side for a minute, and I've just felt like it was an interesting thing to just kind of throw in there when it seems Gilead being mentioned. I thought this was kind of interesting that we're talking about a Gilead paying $178 million to doctors to promote drugs despite patients' deaths, right? It's so many examples of these things that you could, you mentioned Johnson & Johnson numerous times, and yet these are the entities that are involved with our safety. I just continue to find that to be ridiculous.
Hey, well, Gilead used to be headed by Donald Rumsfeld, and he left to become George W. Bush's Secretary of Defense. That company, among a lot of these other pharmaceutical companies, are really shady, but Gilead is extra shady. Anyway. So the CTI League also works with unspecified law enforcement partners in the U.S., and they work very closely with CISA, the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, which is overseen by DHS. The current CISA director, Christopher Krebs, this is actually not correct. He wasn't director of cybersecurity, or I think he may have been at one point director of cybersecurity at Microsoft, but right before he became head of CISA, he was in charge of Microsoft's relationship with the U.S. government, was the VP for their government relations. And Microsoft's government contracts, of which there are many. So Christopher Krebs said in April that, you know, he was saying CISA's working around the clock with our public and private sector partners to combat this threat, meaning like COVID-19 crime or whatever. And, you know, this includes longstanding partnerships and some new ones, like our partnership with the CTI League. And there's his tweet about it, talking about the CTI League. So this is also pretty interesting. Since CTI League began working with U.S. authorities, they have taken increasingly to assigning blame to nation states, specifically Russia, China, and Iran, for various cyber intrusions, just as the U.S. government began to do the same. In late April, for example, the Justice Department started saying that Chinese hackers planned to target U.S. hospitals and labs to steal research related to the coronavirus. And anonymous U.S. officials blame China for a hack of HHS and COVID-19 research. No evidence tying China to the hacks was provided, and only anonymous government officials were willing to imply blame in statements given to the press, suggesting that there was not enough evidence to justify going public with the accusation or even open an official investigation against specific foreign entities. Because if they stay anonymous, that means they don't have enough evidence to actually like prosecute it or like do anything about it. It's just, you know, we suspect, and as you'll see in this report, the way they justify blaming certain nation states, these cybersecurity professionals and government officials, I mean, it's like, really, there's not much there most of the time when they do this sort of thing.
Think about how crazy it is that they'll openly admit, as you pointed out in your report, that they are beginning to do the same, and by the way, have been doing the same, and that's not even a secret. And yet they're all up in arms about the hypothetical possibility that maybe that happened, and they can't prove it anyway. What about the fact that they just admitted that they did the very thing that they're freaking out about, right? I mean, why is that not a discussion? They're breaking the law when they do that. Oh, but they're the good guys. Sorry, I forgot. You know, it's like, it's just, it's so hypocritical.
Justice League. What are you talking about?
I forgot. They're all about justice. It's right in the name.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. All right. So anyway, so the same week, okay, that U.S. officials were blaming China for all of this stuff, CTI League's founder, Ohad Zaidenberg, claimed that China, Iran, and Russia are, quote, trying to steal everything. He was quoted in CBS News as like their main expert in that article I linked to there, saying this, saying those three countries, quote, can steal information regarding the coronavirus, information they don't have. If they believe someone is creating a vaccine and they want to steal information about it, or they can use the pandemic as leverage so they can to steal any other type of information. So Zaidenberg, if you actually read his quotes and stuff, his English is like not so good. So like even then I had to like sort of put in some things to make it sort of understandable, but I don't know why CBS didn't do that. So pretty interesting that he's just going around on the news being like, they're stealing all the things, you know,
not providing any evidence,
you know, just like, yes, they do steal everything. You are correct. Like, okay. Pretty
journalism.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Right. So who is Ohad Zaidenberg? This guy is just, I mean, he and his company, they are out of control, as you will see in a second. So there's four founders of CTI League, but the idea and the key original founder was this guy, Zaidenberg, who was previously an award-winning commander in Unit 8200. So Jeez. Many Unit 8200 commanders. I mean, it's just like, oh, they must be in a club or something after they leave, right? Anyway. While serving in Unit 8200, Zaidenberg specialized in acts of cyber warfare targeting Iran and was began in Unit 8200 before becoming commander as a Persian language analyst. His current biography states that he continues to remain, quote, focused on Iran as a strategic intelligence target. And he describes himself as, quote, an authority in the operations of key Iranian APTs or advanced persistent threats. So the guy was a commander in Israeli intelligence where he focused on Iran the whole time. And then he left and now he's in the private sector, but he still focuses on Iran as a strategic intelligence target. And he is going around telling people Iran is stealing everything. Okay, let's believe him. Anyway, it gets worse though, because he didn't just leave the private sector. He's like the company he works for. Well, I mean, I'll just tell you, they're super tied up with the government still. So Zaidenberg is the leading cyber intelligence researcher at a company called Clear Sky Cybersecurity, or just Clear Sky, an Israeli company directly partnered with Checkpoint and Verint, who we talked about yesterday, Verint being Converse Infosys, where Cyber Reasons, two of their co-founders used to work in Checkpoint, as we talked about yesterday in the video, if you go back and watch it. A former high-ranking guy in the IDF says Unit 8200 still influences what goes on at places like Checkpoint and Verint Inc. So,
not hard to see with Unit 8200 members seemingly at every position. It's not hard to realize that.
Yeah. Anyway, beyond that, their partnerships with Checkpoint and Verint, Clear Sky collaborates daily with Elta Systems, an Israeli state-owned subsidiary of the state-owned weapons manufacturer Israel Aerospace Industries. And the founder of Clear Sky he actually created Israel's e-government platform. So government contractor. Hmm. Zaidenberg is also a researcher at the Tel Aviv-based Institute for National Security Studies, which focuses on national security and democracy in an era of post-truth and fake news. Anyway, that program where Zaidenberg is working works directly with the Israeli government and the IDF, and it's currently headed by the former head of the IDF's Intelligence Analysis Division. So,
unbelievable. I mean, again, remember that regardless of being Israel itself, any other entity, any other countries, governments, intelligence community, or you know, any level of it or part of it, having this much access to another country's infrastructure, critical infrastructure, is, I mean, I wouldn't say unprecedented. Who knows if it's been somewhere else, but this is not okay. And if it were Russia or somebody else likewise demonized, it would be outrageous. But because they just kind of painted Israel as the, you know, untouchable, never discussed ally that never changes, despite all the things they've done to the U.S., it just gets ignored. It's just staggering to me.
Right. So, like, the main point here is that Israel, as I'll show after we get through this article, has essentially admitted that they want before Trump leaves office, i.e. before January 2021, when a new president could be inaugurated in case Trump loses the election, they want to goad the U.S. into striking Iran first. And what better way to do that than to have some big cyber attack take place and be like, it was Iran. You should bomb them. Right. Anyway, we'll get into that a little bit later. Don't want to get too ahead of ourselves, but along that line, you know, that's worth keeping in mind as I get into this next part. So Clear Sky and Zaidenberg specifically are often cited by U.S. mainstream media outlets as the sole source for dubious claims that Iranian hackers have been responsible for a series of high-profile hacks and alleged disinformation campaigns. Let's believe them.
His entire job is about making up, about talking about things about Iran, and we're listening to him as the sole source about whether Iran's guilty.
Yeah,
that's just dumb.
I mean,
It's just stupid.
Pretty, well, I mean, this dumbness, right? 100% facilitated by the mainstream media, as you'll see in a moment. I mean, just like, it's egregious. So in this one, there were a lot of examples. So in the interest of keeping this article not too long, I only referenced a couple. So in this one in Forbes, February 2018, it talked about Clear Sky's claim, citing only Zaydenberg by name. So that article, if you go and read it, it says Clear Sky is Zaydenberg, and then Clear Sky is an entity itself, and that's it, right? So they say an individual that they claim Zaydenberg claims is linked to Iran's government was responsible for an Iranian propaganda machine targeting the BBC and producing fake news. Okay.
I love the linked to Iran. That realistically could mean the janitor in the government building, right?
Oh, like, just wait until you hear his explanation. I mean, it's pretty clownish. So Zaydenberg said that this like propaganda machine, it sounds all scary, right? So there was some guy behind three fake news sites that like no one read. Again, like sort of like the Russian meddling Facebook memes, 25% of people didn't even see them. Or like 25% of the memes they paid for were never seen. Anyway, the sites didn't publish actual fake news stories. They published criticisms of the BBC. So it's not really fake news. It was basically like an angry Iranian guy, like being like, BBC is imperialist bullshit. And
so expressing his opinions. Yeah. Oh, that's just not allowed.
Yeah. But anyway, Zaydenberg says the guy that had these sites, he's believed to have worked for Iran's National Ministry of Communications.
Well, that sound.
He's believed, i.e. unconfirmed, to have worked perhaps for Iran's National Ministry of Communications in the past. Have worked. It's the past tense. So he's not currently working for them. Why he made those sites, and he's not even sure if he actually did work for them in the past. He might have. That's what all of this hinges on. So anyway, based on the Iranian national's believed work history, Zaydenberg then says, quote, with medium to high certainty, this operation was funded by the Iranian government. Okay.
You don't know, right?
Well, I mean, medium to high certainty. If you actually read these like when they attribute these hacks to like Russia, Iran, or China, you get crap like this all the time. Medium to high certainty that I'm right, meaning like 60%.
Yeah, you don't know, right? That's the thing. They just don't know how to say we don't know, right? They just can't do that. It's
right.
Medium to high certainty. Go ahead.
Well, the problem is that mainstream media leaves that medium to high certainty part for like the ninth paragraph or lower down in the article. And the headline is like, Iran is hacking us and they're making these horrible things. And it's like, you know, I mean, clearly it's, the media is part of the op here, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, Forbes didn't mention the fact that Zaydenberg admits to currently pursuing Iran as a strategic intelligence target. And used to work for Unit 8200. They decided not to mention any of that stuff. Just, medium to high certainty, trust that guy. So right before the founding of CTI League, Zaydenberg and Clear Sky were also the sole source of claims cited in the IB Times, this time that article, that Iranian hackers were exploiting VPN servers to plan to put back doors in companies around the world and target the U.S. and Israeli governments. Just them, just trust Zaydenberg and Clear Sky. They have no conflicts of interest. And again, they said, the hackers in question they're talking about, they say again, medium to high probability that it's Iranian because the activities they observed overlapped with the past activity of an unspecified Iranian offensive.
Wow, that's incredible. That's not even medium to high certainty. Now they're on probability, and that's not even medium to high probability.
Do you see what's going on here? I mean, this is bad.
It really is. This is not even journalistic in any sense at all. You are taking broad, undefined claims of people who have obvious conflicts of interest and using those sole things to drive very serious actions. And think about this, ladies and gentlemen, and we're talking about the past events we always mention, you know, WMDs in Iraq and so on. How many of these things have been actually verified? Almost none of them. And I mean, and 9 times out of 10, as you're even clearly making the case here, they source back to the Israeli government. And they never even end up defining these things. And yet they continue to build, even though they're undefined, to some kind of an outcome like we saw the limpet mines, the whole back and forth with Iran. Those were all based on undefined allegations of medium to high certainty that we never, ever proven. How did we allow that to become the case as the American people? We need to ask ourselves that.
Right. And just think of the parallels between this and like saying Iraq has WMDs.
Right.
Right. Okay. And then they tried to blame the anthrax attacks. Those were Saddam's WMDs. That was a biological weapon he released. I mean, obviously that didn't go as planned, which is why they always tell you to remember 9/11, but never tell you to remember the 2001 anthrax attacks.
Right.
Funny how that works. But I mean, what this is doing is that even though clearly their justification for blaming Iran is like, doesn't hold water at all. The idea is like, if a big cyber attack takes place and they call it the cyber 9/11 or something like that, you know, I mean, remember the day of 9/11, there were people on TV immediately being like, this appears to be the work of Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, like right away before there could be any investigation, you know, but people were prepped before then to believe, wasn't there a news report a few months ago saying Osama bin Laden declared war on the US or something, or like issued an edict and all this stuff, right?
There's been a lot of really good articles and even just research on this in regard to how often, and I mean, I feel like almost every single time, specifically the US government grabs the microphone the moment that something happens to start setting the narrative. And it's no brainer to realize there's no way they could possibly know without investigation unless they've got, you know, some special intelligence, which is what they always hope you think. But every time, just like with COVID-19, just like with every other event, like you're saying, how would the news possibly know that right in that moment? Because there's some entity driving the agenda to get that narrative set in minds before anybody else has the opportunity to bring anything to the table. Yes. That's what we're seeing here.
Exactly. Or before there can be any investigation. So if there's a big cyber attack, you know, I mean, we could assume any sort of attack takes time to investigate, but they don't want time to investigate it, you know? Anyway, this is probably the most outrageous of all, because it just shows, in my opinion, what the CTI League is really about. Okay, so Clear Sky and Zeidenberg's claims regarding Iran only intensified after the CTI League was founded, with Clear Sky and Zeidenberg being the only source for the claim made earlier this year in May that Iran had been responsible for hacking Gilead. You guys remember that story? Mm-hmm. That Gilead had been hacked by Iran? Yeah, so that was these guys. And at the time, that was like, oh, scary, they're hacking our COVID cures. The hack was a single fake email login page designed to steal passwords, and no one clicked on it.
So a phishing email. Cool.
Yeah, but no one clicked on it. Like, no one even knows. Anyway, Clear Sky, all of this, the first outlet report on this hack was Reuters. And Clear Sky was the only people in Zeidenberg, the only people that Reuters article cites, go and look at it. And then Clear Sky claimed, well, we're the ones that foiled the Gilead hack. Yep. And remember that group I mentioned earlier that CTI League has been working with since they were founded, and they're helping protect? Gilead is part of that and has been partnered with Zeidenberg's CTI League weeks prior to the alleged hack. So CTI League was there. Anyone can join CTI League as long as Ohad Zeidenberg says, come on in, and we don't have to know who they are, but they can be all up in our hospitals and all up in the pharmaceutical companies, and I guess now nuclear reactors and chemical plants. And
I love the idea that you can be like, oh, this thing happened, but we stopped it. Don't worry about anything else. It's all, we already saved you. You know, it's just this idea that like, and you know, and this ties in with a lot of the other things we always point out, this kind of like preemptive, where they just kind of claim something happened and just jump right to the part where they claim that they took action, as opposed to proving that it happened in the first place. That's right. So relevant to so many discussions today.
I misspoke, I guess, because I wrote this article in March. So Zeidenberg is the only person they cite by name in the Reuters article. Reuters also cites two other but anonymous cybersecurity researchers. They don't say who they work for.
Same difference.
So it could be anyone, or they could work for Clear Sky.
Or they could not exist, right? I mean, or that's...
perhaps, indeed. Who knows? But check out how Zeidenberg knew that it was Iran. The web domains and hosting servers used in the hacking attempts were linked to Iran. How were they linked to Iran, Zeidenberg? Care to say? Oh, I guess not.
Yeah. You know what that reminds me of?
Probably. probability. It's bullshit.
Yeah, definitely. You know what that reminds me of in regard to the email thing? Remember the whole Russiagate and that it boiled down to the fact that Podesta himself had been the victim of a phishing email, like your grandfather might, right? And that's ultimately, and they just kind of continue this whole argument that it was a Russian hack, you know, not to get bogged down in the Seth Rich and that discussion and all that. That's right. Obviously not the case, but it's so interesting how it's the same kind of thing. We're talking about something that's basic that everybody gets. And just because just because something may be tied back to a country doesn't mean it's tied back to the government. And they're not even actually verifying whether that tie is even there. This is just really ridiculous.
Right. Totally ridiculous. And then I point out here how the CISA and the FBI, CISA, of course, working with the CTI League, FBI, also, you know, working with the ADL now, right? You know, they're all recently put out warnings that Iran's going to hack us. You guys better be scared. Of course, none of this, you've talked about on the Daily Wrap-Up a lot of times, Iran itself has been the subject of insane cyber attacks all year long, and that hasn't gotten much play in the media.
Open, kinda too. Weird. Like, that's not even a secret. I think the New York Times even wrote about how they're talking
Israel's
about these
admitted
things.
That, like, most of those, if not all of them, were them in intelligence Crazy. Operations, which would have been done by Unit 8200, oddly enough. Because that's what, you know, offensive hacking operations right. against nation states, right? Like Lior Div used to do, cyber
and
reasons.
There is no legal justification for this, no matter what they say. Even if you believe everything they're saying about Iran, that's still an illegal act.
Hey, but you can justify anything as long as you put national security right. as a label on top of it. It absolves you of anything.
Or just scream you're fighting for freedom, apparently, and that just alleviates everything.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Anyway, as I point out here, so not only has Iran been targeted, and as you pointed out, Israel's essentially openly admitted that they've been involved in most of those, if not all of them. I point out here, I mean, just a really brief summary of the history. There's a lot more detail here if people are interested in looking into this. But top Israeli intelligence officials have attempted for years to goad the U.S. into making the first move against Iran, both covertly and overtly. Here I talk about some Mossad stuff with Iran. But one important thing, you should go watch this interview that Mayor Dagan, when he was still alive, the former Mossad director of former director of Mossad. At the time he gave this interview, he was chairman of the board of Black Cube, which we talked a little bit about yesterday. Anyway, Mayor Dagan, when he was Mossad director, he pushed the U.S. State Department to pursue covert measures and urge more attention on regime change in Iran while head of Mossad. And he said in 2012, he thinks the U.S. needs to strike Iran first so Israel doesn't have to. That's a 60 Minutes interview. You should really go and watch it because he's pretty blatant. He's like, well, we need to make it, it's not Israel's war. We need to make it an international war. And that means that the U.S. strikes first. I mean, that's a summary of what he says. Yeah, so international war is how they frame it. Pretty crazy. And here we go. So Israeli officials have been relatively candid about their role in several of the recent cyber attacks that have befallen Iran, as well as the fact that power elements of the Israeli state are right now trying to get the U.S. to join a conflict against Iran before the 2020 presidential election, while Trump remains in power. But of course, Trump remains in power, as I pointed out earlier, until January 2021. So really, it doesn't have to be before the election. It could be on the election or slightly after the election, right? Also, the effort has led to a concern among EU officials that Israel's government may be seeking to provoke an event whereby the U.S. would engage Iran militarily. This is from this is from antiwar.com. And then this other one is the Business Insider report that you can see here about how Iran is intentional, or sorry, Israel is intentionally conducting cyber attacks and legit bombing things in Iran, trying to force a confrontation before Trump can be removed from office.
Imagine if that was reverse. Imagine if that was saying that Iran was bombing inside of Israel, there would be a war right now. Like, that is so incredibly hypocritical. And I want people to ask themselves too, what do you think Iran gains from this? Like, hypothetically, if you believe everything they're saying, there's no gain. There's no actual military or even societal gain in what they're trying to do that they claim. So what I want people to ask or think about it more appropriately is all they've said in the past is that it's, oh, well, he's just a madman, right? Assad or whoever. Oh, he's a maniac. That's why he likes to gas children. There's no logic to any of this. And the moment you dig into it, you see that there is no motive there. And they're not maniacs like they try to paint them. So then you need to ask, what is the motivation? And if there's not a motivation, then ask, maybe
You know who's a maniac? Dick freaking Cheney. Did anything happen to him? No, he's still chilling. His daughter's in Congress. And he's just like, I am free to do whatever I want. I mean, so are all the other war criminals. I mean, those are the maniacs, dude. I mean, really, Dick Cheney, probably one of the most unhinged people probably ever. And, you know, I don't know.
There's always a motive, right? And that's the end of the day. You see, they keep trying to make this about something like they're stealing this or doing that. There's no actual end game motive for what these countries or governments are trying, that they claim they're doing. They just want you to think they're maniacs. And that just doesn't make sense. That's all I want people to think about, you know?
Right. So here really quick, I mean, I just point out how it's a huge conflict of interest to be citing Zaydenberg and Clear Sky about anything. And the fact that they're running the CTI League, which is allowing all of these faceless volunteers that are vetted by Zaydenberg himself or any of these other guys to like join and be on all these critical networks, right when we're being told our critical infrastructure is going to be hacked and they're in bed with the very government agency that's tasked with protecting our critical infrastructure. Do you not see what's happening here, people? I mean, there's a reason we like are busting ass to get this info out before the election because like, do you see what this is? I mean, it should be pretty freaking blatant, honestly.
Absolutely.
Oh man. I mean, it's just like right there. Anyway, these are the other founders. One of the other founders is Mark Rogers, who began his career as a hacker and then became a hacktivist, an ethical hacker. Doesn't that sound like how Cyber Reasons hackers in the election simulations described themselves? Anyway, when he became an ethical hacker, he went to work for Vodafone, another multinational gigantic corporation. So I guess that's ethical hacking to this guy. So crazy. So anyway, he's currently the vice president of cybersecurity strategy at Okta, which is an enterprise identity solution platform. But it's co-founded by former Salesforce executives. By the way, Salesforce, you should go read Corey Morningstar's new expose. They are super involved with the World Economic Forum, you know, the Great Reset people and all of that stuff, the Salesforce people. And also one of the guys that co-founded the TIP is tied up with them too, or Transition Integrity Project. They'll be in the next video. So, and Okta is also one of their main investors, if not their main investor, is this venture capital firm, Andreessen Horowitz, which backs some of Ehud Barak's companies, including Toka, which is basically allows governments and police to hack any device connected to the Internet of Things in the name of national security. And their main advisor is Larry Summers, the Jeffrey Epstein pal, former president of Harvard and former secretary of the Treasury under Bill Clinton. So fun company there. We'll be seeing Okta pop up a little bit later. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm just trying to lighten the mood, I guess. I don't know. So the other two founders of CTI League are Microsoft guys, Nate Warfield and Chris Mills. Warfield is a former self-described gray hat hacker, meaning, you know, there's white hats and there's black hats. He's like, gray hat. I was in between. Anyway, here, the definition I pulled up for the article says, a hacker or cybersecurity professional who violates laws or common ethical standards, but without malicious intent.
So a mercenary, essentially, right? It's all just about the money, right? That's what that boils down to.
Well, I mean, I guess you could interpret it that way, but basically he breaks the law, but didn't mean to. That's essentially what that's saying. I was doing it for good. I didn't know that I was actually, you know.
To be clear, though, not having malicious intent does not then imply good intentions, right? Like, as a mercenary doesn't have malicious intent. They just do it because they're paid, right?
No, good point. So anyway, Warfield now works as a senior program manager at Microsoft Security Response Center. And the other guy, Chris Mills, also works for Microsoft Security Response Center and previously created the U.S. Navy's Computer Forensics Lab while he was at the Navy's Cyber Defense Operations Command. So the Microsoft Security Response Center, or MSRC, proactively builds a collective defense working with industry and government security organizations to fend off cyber attacks, another public-private partnership. There's so many of those these days. Anyway, It also works with the Cyber Defense Operations Center and Microsoft's other cybersecurity teams, including those previously overseen by Chris Krebs when he was in charge of Microsoft's U.S. policy work on cybersecurity and technology issues. Krebs, as previously mentioned, is now head of the federal agency overseen by DHS called CISA that oversees the protection of critical electronic infrastructure in the U.S., including the voting system and the lead up to the election, where Krebs himself says everything's going to be hacked. Okay, so in addition to the above, MSRC is also heavily focused on pursuing the cybersecurity needs of Microsoft customers, which includes the U.S. government and the Department of Defense. MSRC is directly affiliated with Microsoft's Election Guard, which we talked about yesterday. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned before, the push for the adoption of Election Guard software in the U.S., largely spearheaded by Chris Krebs-led CISA.
Perfect.
So, oh no, the people protecting, I'm sorry, I phrased that wrong. I was going to make a... I'll just move on.
Well, don't forget out there that, you know, there's the tie-in, I think, with Microsoft is so relevant for a lot of reasons, but yeah. Microsoft is clearly tied in it from a lot of different angles. And Bill Gates absolutely still has influence mm-hmm. over that company, right? That's not something we can pretend isn't there. That's relevant. Right.
No, absolutely. So I was just going to reiterate how, you know, we have the guy in the government leading the agency in charge of protecting election infrastructure. He issues warnings saying the election infrastructure is going to be hacked, but he's partnering with groups like CTI League, right? And mm-hmm. then they have a solution to, if an awful hack happens, the very solution he's been lobbying for to be put on voting machines nationwide, Microsoft's Election Guard. You know, I mean, it's basically like the easiest setup ever to have that yeah. rammed through after some sort of catastrophic election infrastructure event.
And just like you pointed out before, in every one of these cases, you have the actions. They're taking actions which set up the need for what they want to drive in. That's a child could see that.
Right. I agree. Anyway, so this part is really important, which is why it's pretty much the article from in this section is all highlighted, because it is really important. So Microsoft and the MSRC, specifically at Microsoft, have been at the center alongside ClearSky over the past 2 years of claims linking Iran's government to recent hacking events and assertions that Iranian government-linked hackers will soon target the U.S. power grid and other critical infrastructure with cyber attacks. And a lot of this was in part 3 of my Cyber Reason series, which we didn't cover yesterday. It's going to be in the next video, but part of it anyway. Last year, for example, Microsoft penned a blog post about a, quote, threat group referred to as Phosphorus, which is also sometimes referred to as Advanced Persistent Threat, or APT-35, or Charming Kitten, because they love these names, Fuzzy Bear and Charming Kitten, you know. Those groups never call themselves that. That's like the name these professional cybersecurity professionals give to them. Anyway, Microsoft claimed in that blog post that they believe the group originates from Iran and is linked to the Iranian government, but did not provide more details as to why they hold that belief, despite the implications of the claim, just like ClearSky, right? So they went on to assert that this Iranian Phosphorus group attempted to target a U.S. presidential campaign. Remember that story? Mm-hmm. Which subsequent media reports revealed was President Trump's re-election campaign. Microsoft concluded the attempt was not technically sophisticated and was ultimately unsuccessful, but the company felt compelled not only to disclose the event, but attempt to link it to Iran's government. Remember, they didn't provide any evidence as to why. They just said, we believe. It's our belief. But we won't tell you why we believe that.
And you shared this, we know that's happening again already, right? Are we saving that for later on, or should I show it right now? Because that's something that seems relevant to what you're talking about.
Which story is it?
The Republican Party, you're saying hackers are already targeting Trump's re-election campaign again, now.
Sure, if you want to pull it up, go
yeah,
for it.
I believe you sent this to me. So this was that's happening right now. You know, that it's Wisconsin Republican Party says hackers targeted and stole over 2.3 million from an account dedicated to President Trump's reelection. But what's funny about that, and there's already insinuations of Iranian ties and so on, that there was already the example that you and I laughed at right when this started that, oh, Iran is trying to help Trump's campaign. It's like, what? That doesn't even make sense, but it doesn't even matter. It's just kind of like Iran, just throw it in there somehow, you know? And so this is the opposite side of it. Now they're hurting his campaign, but it's still Iran somehow. It just doesn't even make sense.
I mean, it's crazy. They just want you to think that Iran's targeting us constantly and, you know, be afraid.
Right.
Oh man. Anyway, so this story gets even crazier. So it's worth pointing out that the only presidential campaign, because using Microsoft's Account Guard software, which is part of Microsoft's Defending Democracy program, where NewsGuard comes from, remember them? And Election Guard come from? Yeah, Trump was the one using that. So Microsoft's, you know, Defending Democracy program was protecting the emails that were hacked by Iran. Okay.
If you haven't read those articles, I'll try to remember to include those. The ones Whitney Reb wrote about these, just dismantle these companies. It's a joke, but I need to remember to include those because these companies are absurd.
Anyone that thinks Microsoft cares about defending democracy, I recommend you go back and you look at how Bill Gates ran that company and how he even got sued by the government over antitrust stuff because of how ruthlessly he built a monopoly. And you think that guy cares about your democratic freedoms, dude?
Yeah, it was a way to censor dissenting opinions. And we saw that already. And now we're just having new variations of it today.
Yeah, well, NewsGuard is out of control. They're a story for another day. But if you go to this article, you can find my link to my NewsGuard article in there, which was also originally published at Mint Press News. You can search on their site for it, too. Anyway, so though it provided no evidence for the hack even taking place or its reasons for believing that the attack originated from Iran, media reports treated Microsoft's declaration as proof that Iran had begun actively meddling in the 2020 presidential election. Remember that since then, we talked about this the other day, that Google came out and said Iranian disinformation campaign, but had like no evidence either. It was like very similar to this Microsoft one. Anyway, the headlines based on Microsoft's belief it was Iran, but there's no proof. Here are some examples. Iranian hackers target Trump campaign as 2020 threats mount. Iran-linked hackers target Trump 2020 campaign, Microsoft says. Microsoft, Iran government-linked hacker targeted 2020 presidential campaign. By the way, they just remember say they believe it originated from Iran. The government link, oh man, these people are reaching hard and it shows. Anyway, Microsoft says Iranians tried to hack U.S. presidential campaign.
Constantly they're attacking alternative media, independent media for more sound arguments than that, you know, and it's just such hypocritical writing. It really is bad. And you ask yourself how these people justify that in their minds, because this is basic stuff. I mean, you could clearly see that this one source is just, you know, who has a couple of anonymous people along with him, is not a valid source to be pushing something that has this much effect on policy. Like, people's lives are at stake and they must know that, you know, so you wonder who's driving this.
Right. So here's the kicker. Phosphorus, this Iranian linked group that they won't say how it's linked to Iran, is the same group that Clear Sky and Zaydenberg keep talking about. But they refer to it as a different name, but it's the same, the Charming Kitten. So Zaydenberg calls it Charming Kitten. Microsoft calls it Phosphorus. But if you read the fine print, it's the same group. But by using those two different names and getting cited in all these different media reports, it creates the appearance that there's multiple Iranian hacker groups that they're accusing of stuff. But it's really one group. And isn't it weird that you say the same people accusing them, Microsoft and Zaydenberg, creating the CTI League together? I don't know. Maybe it's them. Too conspiratorial, right? Yeah.
They planned this out. Uh-oh, that's not possible, right? It's just incredible.
Oh, man. Yeah, so anyway, I conclude that paragraph with, it certainly is interesting that the four founding members of CTI League share ties to the same military intelligence agencies and associated corporations, as well as an interest in the exact same group of alleged Iranian hackers. That is so weird.
What a coincidence.
Anyway, just to wrap up here. So remember earlier I said CTI League has a focus on disinformation? Well, it turns out all their other members are anonymous, right? But from this lady's LinkedIn, it mentions her being in the CTI League as their disinformation specialist, Sarah Jane Terp, a former computer scientist for the UK military in the United Nations. But she currently works at something called the Credibility Coalition. Don't they sound nice? They describe themselves as an effort to address online misinformation by defining factors that communicate information reliability to readers. It's funded by Google and Facebook. And also Craig Newmark Philanthropies, which is Craig Newmark is the guy behind Craigslist. He's a billionaire. And he has been pouring his money into tons of anti-fake news initiatives. And we'll see him again in a little bit. And also the Knight Foundation, a major backer of the Microsoft-affiliated NewsGuard. The Trust Project was basically Craig Newmark and Pierre Omidyar. Pierre Omidyar, by the way, helped set up the ADL Hate Lab. And I'm pretty sure Craig Newmark gave them money as well. And I think that's it for the CTI League. Yeah. So this article is really important, has a lot more information. Follow the links and check these people out. This is no coincidence, really, that they're setting this up. And speaking of Iran, another example of awful reporting that really needs to be covered. 13 hours ago, from when we're recording this video, Pentagon leaders targeted by potential threats linked to killing of Iranian General Soleimani. Soleimani was killed in January. They want us to believe they waited until almost November to get mad about it. That makes sense.
Well, I would argue that there has been an argument even from the beginning, and even from people that are, I guess, pro-Iranian, if you want to state it like that, that it made the argument that Iran has the level head kind of mentality and would intentionally wait until there was, you know, and so on. But that's probably why they're pushing that. But nonetheless, it really doesn't make sense seeing as how they have already responded. That's what I think is, you know, their open attacks based on what the U.S. government did, right? That's what I think doesn't make sense about it.
Well, I'll humor that, but take a look at these threats and what they're really saying, and keep in mind the timing of Iran's going to hack the hospitals and infrastructure and all this stuff, okay? So it was first reported by NBC News on Thursday and verified by Fox. That the threats could be linked to the killing of Soleimani. They don't actually know, okay? The names of the Pentagon officials allegedly targeted were not released, but they're believed to have been the senior leadership involved in the Soleimani killing. By the way, Israel basically was behind, largely involved in prompting the U.S. to kill Soleimani. If you're not familiar with that, I recommend and go look it up. It didn't come out right after the Soleimani killing, but by February, they essentially admitted they were involved.
Yeah, so, and we covered this extensively. I'll try and remember to include some videos about, you know, what this really was. And this was a diplomatic mission that people were invited on. The Iraqi government already admitted this, and so on. Right. And this was an extrajudicial assassination. That's what it was.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, they're citing here for all this information a person familiar with the threats. They don't tell you who they are, so totally anonymous, saying concerns of Iran harming American officials extend to civilian officials as well. A person familiar with the threats. I mean, this is just like before the invasion with Iraq. I hope people remember. I mean, I know it was a long time ago, but like, it's the same crap. So the incident about the threats is based on this incident that reportedly involved a senior Pentagon official followed by an Iranian national, okay? All of this whole article comes from this incident. So what was the incident? This Pentagon official, who asked not to be identified for security reasons, we don't know who he is, okay, was followed after getting into a black government-owned SUV. The driver of the tail, later identified as an Iranian national driving a car with Virginia plates, followed them for 5 to 7 miles, reportedly driving aggressively at times, but they easily lost him after changing routes. And the Pentagon issued a be on the lookout alert, or a BOLO, and informed federal law enforcement authorities of the incident, releasing details of the Iranian national's Facebook and Instagram accounts, which shows he had friends in Iran and Afghanistan, that bad man.
Yeah.
Friends in Iran and the country that borders it. He clearly is. Why did they include that, you know?
They're insinuating that Iranian people are bad, that Afghanistan, despite them trying to always pretend that they're fighting for the people, everything they do hurts the people. That's the idea, that they try to pretend like just because he's from Iran that he's suspect. It's the same thing they do about Russia. And that's so incredible that they're issuing this based on, I mean, ah, just, it is, it does,
Some
it just
guy
bothers
followed
me.
Them, but no one knows if he was just driving the same way.
He could, I mean, the fact that, oh, we lost him after, you know, a one turn, maybe he wasn't even following them. I mean, it's totally hypothetical just because the guys are wrong. Go ahead.
Check this out, though. Pentagon and FBI officials disagree on whether the event even constitutes an actual attempt to target a senior Pentagon official.
Even these
guys don't even think it's, you know, I mean, it's just this one guy being like, time to seed something in the mainstream media that Iran is going after our leaders and there might be a war with Iran soon. I mean,
with this kind of stretch in what happened. With this kind of stretch, you really start wondering whether that this event even took place. Like, if people on their team are going, nah, that's not something, you know, and they're pushing it out anyway, you know, what's to tell us this even real? I mean, there's just so much aggressive misinformation. And remember, we've talked about many times the Smith Modernization Act.
This article is misinformation. Why doesn't CTI League target them? Oh, wait, they're promoting the war with Iran that they want.
Well, that's what I was saying is Smith Modernization Act, for those who don't remember, right? This made it legal for our government to do this if they say national security. They can literally lie and make fake news if they argue it's for your safety or whatever, right? And that's what this could be.
So here it is again. The FBI investigated the event and found no relation between the Iranian national and the Iranian government. No link, the FBI even says it, or any reason to suspect it was part of a larger security concern.
So why even write this article? That's just
because of all the stuff they're seeding. So we know why, but I mean, this is clownish, but dangerous. And then they add this at the end. Remember this tweet from Trump? Mm-hmm. Press, who, by the way, is funded by people like Sheldon Adelson, who are on camera talking about nuking Iran. So according to press reports, Iran may be planning an assassination or other attack against the United States for Soleimani. Right. So, I mean, they're trying to tie something together here. And this report originated from NBC. I just looked at this report, but it's worth pointing out that NBC employs Ken Delanian, who was fired from the Los Angeles Times for, letting the CIA write his reports for him. I wonder if he's the writer. I don't actually know, but I almost suspect that it's him.
Just so we're clear, by the way, for those who don't know that, that's not hyperbole, right? That's a fact. Right. That that's not just one off, right? We know that there are other examples like this where intelligence entities are essentially writing articles for journalists or journalists.
Right. Well, anyway, he works at that same national security part of NBC that those two women that wrote this article work for. So
how do you even keep a job if you're not in a fake position where you're letting anybody write an article for you? I mean, that just has to show you what these people really are.
Right. So anyway, moving on from the CTI leak stuff, this was yesterday? FBI warns ransomware assault threatens U.S. healthcare system. Cyber attacks involve ransomware, which can only be attacks, which can only be unlocked if you pay the bribe, essentially. So federal agencies, it's the FBI and CISA, by the way, they're saying they have credible information that they won't tell you of an increase in imminent cybercrime threat to U.S. hospitals and healthcare providers, specifically the specific places where they have put these CTI League people. No one knows who they are. I mean, the CTI League thing, if you just think about it and you just take out like the Microsoft and the Unit 8200 stuff, and you're like, why would you let a group of anonymous people that aren't being vetted by anything official, just like the founders of the group, and let them in to the most vulnerable infrastructure of the U.S.? I mean,
it's a no-brainer. It's incredibly, that's the same point. And all you have to do is insert some other entity there, and it's this horrible weakness and security risk, right? It is, no matter what, is your point. No matter who is in that position, it's a potential risk that people with motives of their own could be there or let somebody else in, who then has access to things that could affect your safety, your family, your livelihood. Right. You know, that's not something we should be allowing.
Right. So this was this warning was the FBI, DHS's CISA, Chris Krebs, who we just talked about, and HHS, which, as we've talked about numerous times, insanely corrupt, Robert Kadlec, Alex Azar, all of those guys, HHS, okay? I mean, just really crazy that this is happening right now, but wait until you see the people they're actually citing for this, like this company. We talked about it earlier. Remember how I mentioned FireEye at the beginning? The guy that used to head FireEye is now on the board of vice chair of Cyber Reasons board. He's on Team 8. He's on this Unit 8200 companies. Mandiant is a subsidiary of FireEye. And they're the guys out here saying there's threats to the hospital system.
You know, and to your point before about making it seem like there's other groups, even in regard to Iran, it's kind of the same idea here, right? They use their, you know, public-private partnerships and their shell companies and their subsidiaries to make it seem like there's all these people on the same opinion, but it really comes down to an entity driving it.
Right. So CISA leader, CISA being the Chris Krebs agency at DHS, puts the health sector project on the level of the election security initiative. Right. So he's prioritizing protection of the election system and the healthcare system. By the way, Microsoft also has its own like AI telehealth branch that they would love to see rolled out in hospitals. I wonder if Chris Krebs promotes that just like he promotes Election Guard all day long.
Well, we see the blending of these narratives. I mean, we've been talking about it in the past episode, too, you know, that there seems to be just one event that will end up tying all of this together, right? You know, biological aspect shows up in this whole attack. And suddenly now it all works together with the contact tracing and COVID-19 and the whole thing, you know, and that's that even the headline seems to suggest that there's going to be a converging of these things.
Exactly. Exactly. It certainly seems that way. So this article, we're going to look at a little more in depth and just look at the experts they're citing for this threat and who they are. You'll be surprised, or maybe you won't. We'll see. So several hospitals targeted a new wave of ransom attacks. So now it's gone from a warning, okay, to several hospitals are now actively being targeted right before the election. And I mean, you can watch the CNN lady here, but she makes it sound really super doomsday-tacular. Surprising, right? So anyway, several hospitals across the U.S. have been targeted. So it went from the warning came out, and immediately after targeting, they're being attacked, okay? So CISA issues a warning advisory on Wednesday regarding ransomware activity targeting healthcare facilities. Again, it's CISA, the FBI, and HHS.
Are they, so they're saying targeted. Are they saying that they were actually attacked?
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's a little bit of a shadowy part right there, because if you were targeting somebody, you're not necessarily attacking them just yet, right?
A Trump administration official who's anonymous told CNN that several hospitals have been targeted in the attacks over the past 2 days.
Interesting.
While it's still early, the incidents may be connected and we're investigating. I wonder who they will blame. We'll see what happens. Anyway, experts with Mandiant, a cybersecurity firm, said they identified at least 3 attacks on Tuesday and 1 on Wednesday. They're partnered with CISA, okay? As I mentioned earlier, Mandiant, you can see their site here, but if you look at the URL, fireeye.com/Mandiant. And who are they partnered with? Microsoft and Mandiant announced their strategic partnership. Very good to see that. And, you know, here they are talking about FireEye again. And in case you forgot, here's this guy on Team 8 and all this stuff. CEO and executive chairman at FireEye right before joining all these Israeli intelligence-linked companies. So that's normal. And by normal, not normal at all. And so they cite their main guy here talking about, you know, he's calling this the most significant cybersecurity threat we've ever seen in the U.S. Get ready for your cyber 9/11, people.
What? How can you even possibly make the argument that it's the most significant cyber? They're floating things that aren't even verified, and that's already the most significant cybersecurity threat?
They're drumming up the fear because there's going to be some event, obviously. I mean, it's pretty much as clear as day
at this point.
And then here's a lady, look. Allison Liska, an intelligence analyst for Recorded Future, said that his company knows of at least 6 attacks in the last 24 hours, and there are probably more.
That's probably.
Recorded Future. Remember the name Recorded Future? I'm going to show you who these people are in a second, and you're just going to be like, what? But listen to what this person's saying from there. It is absolutely the biggest thing we've ever seen. In terms of ransomware, it's the biggest attack we've ever seen. It's crushing to see so many hospitals hit at the same time. And then we have Chris Krebs from CISA being in here. But before I show you the other people, who is Recorded Future? Who could they possibly be? Well, let's go to their website and about. And look, they have this convenient little timeline about their history. But let's go to the beginning and see who created this company. I'm sure you'll be surprised. Oh, it's just Google Ventures and the CIA's InQtel setting up recorded future and now saying, oh man.
Well, you know, you're talking in the beginning about, you know, the pro bono protection of these hospitals, right? And, you know, you're watching this, all of these hospitals are about to be attacked. It's the same idea we just talked about with Carbine 911 and the justification. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so crazy transparent.
Yeah, Microsoft and Google have both been putting tons of money in health initiatives and making new healthcare stuff. I mean, we talked about like in September or something, I did that report on Google and the Pentagon teaming up to do AI predictive diagnosis of cancer and that it's going to be COVID-19. I mean, these companies that are backing these people want this to happen. I mean, they have a financial incentive for it to happen is my point. Okay. So
totally.
Then the other people they cite besides the FireEye Mandiot guy and the dude from the company funded by NQTel and Google is Chris Krebs himself, director of CISA, and then Microsoft's corporate vice president. Okay. Tom Burt. But they don't tell you that Chris Krebs also used to be Microsoft or that Mandiot is in a strategic partnership with Microsoft. So they don't mention that at all. So these experts all look like they're different people and different experts, but look at those connections. They're essentially right. Like all tied up in the same crap, right? So that's how a lot of this reporting is. And so we have CISA and the FBI and HHS making all these warnings, and CISA in particular, right? But it turns out, we've talked about before this on the show, but I just wanted to bring it up to drive home this point. This FCC ruling that the U.S. government supported was fought against by the people who maintain the critical infrastructure in the United States. Utility companies and first responders, i.e. 911 call, you know, first responders, 911 call systems, the people that work on those, okay, fought against this ruling that the FCC wanted. They're the ones that tried to keep this decision of the FCC's from going through, and they lost. The FCC won, and the government celebrated this. Why is this important? So, because basically what the ruling did is that it opened up the 6 gigahertz frequency for unlicensed Wi-Fi technologies, but doing so, as it notes here, creates an increased risk of interference to utility and public safety activities.
So,
and it was fought against. Because utilities use that exact band for mission critical communications. Interference could negatively impact the monitoring and repair of power lines. They're saying these people are gonna, Iran, China, whatever, gonna hack the power grid. This ruling just happened in early October. Why isn't CISA complaining? They're supposed to protect our infrastructure. Why are they not listening to what the utility companies are saying? They're saying this is a threat to them, but the government is pushing for it and made the decision and is supporting it. And they're ignoring the actual people that protect and maintain the critical infrastructure, right? But they're issuing all these warnings about hospitals, but they're not worried about this stuff. Where are their warnings about the FCC ruling?
Right. So they effectively make it more potential, it's easier to effectively hack or invade, you know, affect or manipulate. And they're going to use that to then blame for anybody they want, as it would appear, right? So their actions they're taking are leading to the situation that justifies the need they want to drive in all of these things. And the people in making those choices after the fact, the people that have been focused on Iran the whole time. Perfect.
Right. Well, you know, what's crazy too. I mean, in the next video, we're going to do all our stuff on Philadelphia, just, Verizon and AT&T just started putting stuff all up in the 6 gigahertz band in Philadelphia. They just did it. And remember back here, our investors, AT&T, and the next group we're going to talk about, you're going to see Verizon all up in there.
And all these companies, by the way, take notice of how wildly all of them are profiting from this situation where people can barely feed their families. It's just coincidence that they're all tied in every time with the agenda in separate places, right? It's very, very clear.
Yeah. Yeah. It's super outrageous. So anyway, with that being said, we're going to move on to another organization you've probably never heard of that I actually didn't learn about until pretty recently. I'd seen them around, which is why when they popped up, I decided to look into them. But I mean, this group is really crazy. And when you see their members, wow, dude. But anyway, this is their history. They were, this is so crazy. If any of you guys know who this dude is, I mean, this history, rightly so, will sound very clownish to you because this dude is super corrupt. Anyway, after years of prosecuting cyber financial fraud crimes with no end in sight, the New York County District Attorney, Cyrus Vance Jr., knew that there had to be a better way to confront the cybercrime epidemic. So he teams up with the City of London Police Commissioner. Remember, the City of London is where all the bankers are in the UK. Okay. And arguably the center of like the global banking cartel is there anyway. So their police commissioner, this guy, and the chairman of the board of the Center for Internet Security, we'll get to them later, believed that something had to be done. And this resulted in a coalition to take on the uphill battle against cybercrime and a recognition that we need to come together as a global community to have a transformational impact on cybersecurity. Knowing the potential that an organization like the Global Cyber Alliance could have, the DA, meaning Cyrus Vance Jr., committed $25 million in criminal asset forfeiture proceeds to fund this critical work over a five-year period. So stuff they stole from people they arrested that was used to set this up.
It seems to be clear, by the way, that asset forfeiture is a wildly unconstitutional concept, and half the time these things are happening because they think you might use them to commit a crime. Right. There's a difference between criminal asset forfeiture and civil asset forfeiture. But at the same time, we're talking about them making an accusation and using that to remove your money from you. And it can be as simple as something as, you know, growing cannabis in a state where it's legal, you know. So the fact that it's just the corruption overflowing. They're taking your money and giving it to things that will be used to you know, control your perception and manipulate what's going on. It's just incredible to me.
But Cyrus Vance Jr. is super known for being ultra corrupt. He didn't go after Harvey Weinstein, even though he was supposed to. He was supposed to go after some people in the Trump family because of different crimes, criminal fraud charges, and he didn't after he received paybacks from those same people he didn't prosecute but was supposed to. Okay. So, and also, if you know anything about like this particular Manhattan District Attorney's office, I mean, it's super known for corruption and ties to organized crime. They'll be in my Epstein book because a lot of things went on there with Roy Cohn, among other people. So keep that in mind. This is the guy that decided to set this up because he just wants to take down those naughty criminals, but he wouldn't go after the powerful criminals. So as we'll see in a little bit, basically, in my opinion, this Global Cyber Alliance is basically like a cybersecurity mafia, and you either join their alliance or they will, you know, hack the crud out of you. Anyway, the Center for Internet Security that was made up with this guy has a lot of interesting people. I don't know if it noted in here, but it talked about them. Here it goes. Meeting with Cyrus Vance Jr. met with this William Pellegrin guy, and that's where he got the idea. And then they went to the London police people. Okay. So who is this guy? Well, he currently manages an exclusive cybersecurity service that helps protect corporate executives, celebrities, politicians, and other high-value individuals from successful cyber attacks. That's interesting. He's also co-chair of Andrew Cuomo's Cybersecurity Advisory Board, the same Andrew Cuomo that was like, hey, I want to have Eric Schmidt and Bill Gates reimagine life in New York thanks to the coronavirus pandemic, and who also sold out his state to be have five smart cities built in the state of New York next year, all by companies tied to Israeli tech. So that's Andrew Cuomo, that guy, among numerous other things that he's done that are super corrupt, but those are the ones that I think are relevant to the topic at hand. So anyway, Pellegrin served three terms as chair of the National Council of ISACs. Remember, we talked about in the CTI League just now, the healthcare ISAC, the Information Sharing and Analysis Center. Well, there's a national one of them, and this guy was in charge of it. It's to advance the physical and cybersecurity of the critical infrastructures of North America. Okay, so the critical infrastructure of North America, they're saying, is going to be hacked, is all tied up in here. Pellegrin also served as a commission of the Center for Strategic and International Studies. They'll be important in a little bit, to brief Barack Obama, President 44, on critical cybersecurity issues. This is an important group that, the acronym for this think tank is CSIS. This is a big deal. So remember that name. We'll get to them in a little bit. This is another board member at the Center for Internet Security, National Security Council under Papa Bush, Bill Clinton, and Deputy DHS Secretary under Obama. Okay, so national security state on the Center for Internet Security. Okay, their other board member, Goldman Sachs, before that, Deutsche Bank, and advisory board to an unnamed current advisor to a director of an unnamed U.S. intelligence agency, probably the CIA because they don't like to name them. They like to be more anonymous, I guess, because, you know, people rightly so associate a litany of crimes with the CIA. He's also on the CFR, the Council on Foreign Relations. Of course, I want to draw your attention, for those of you that have either read Christopher Belin's work on 9/11 or ever done your own investigation to the software side of 9/11, you may recognize this name. We'll get to him later, Anant Yoren. Anyway, the vision of the Global Cyber Alliance is a secure, trustworthy internet that enables social and economic progress. So things that we don't think that these people don't think are trustworthy and that don't enable progress per their subjective opinion of what that means, those things have to go. We have to, you know, protect the internet, internet security.
And right? This brings to mind the discussion if you've written about the legacy systems and all this. And what really stands out from the standing back of the whole picture here is that, you know, they're seemingly, you know, because we see almost could see COVID-19 right now as kind of like a separate part of this discussion, as we keep saying they're coming together. And this seems to make that tie for me, where they're basically arguing that the, you know, all of this, the internet, our cybersecurity in general, all of this is just archaic and we need to be better at it. We need to reimagine it. And that builds to this point where they're removing that for this technocratic, you know, kind of reimagining, which as we keep pointing out, very easily ties over into this COVID-19 thing with just one event, one action. You know, it's more, I recommend you all check out that legacy. What was the name of that article, by the way, in regard to the legacy systems? That's a really important one for this.
Techno-tyranny. Yeah, that's like one of the more important things I pointed out, I think, all year. And it just keeps coming up time and again. Just, you know, Eric Schmidt is basically running the national security state right now. It's out of control. And Henry Kissinger is calling him his best friend and no one is paying attention to that guy. Everyone got on Bill Gates' case with COVID-19, which I agree they should have done, because obviously Bill Gates, there's a lot to expose with that guy. But like we need to be paying attention to Eric Schmidt, too. Yeah, totally. Yeah. So anyway, what I argue is in this vision, because check out what else they say, realizing this vision requires tackling a big problem, reducing cyber risk. So the answer to cyber risk is cybersecurity. And all of these cybersecurity companies like Cyber Reason, right, waiting in the wings to come and make the internet safe. Okay, so they're going to make it, you know, there's these hacks. They're going to say we have to clamp down on the internet for that. We have to clamp down on the internet for hate speech too, which they're tying up with this whole thing also. I mean, they are gunning hard to like really clamp down on the internet.
Think about like the war on terror. Like, you know, are you ever safe from terror, right? It's not possible to remove risk from your life. But that's why they always make these unattainable kind of just nebulous goals that they can just forever go towards.
Or hypothetically. But what's notable is that most of the, pretty much all actually, of the cybersecurity companies that are part of this alliance are AI cybersecurity companies. Right. They use an AI algorithm to do the cybersecurity. This is the way to usher in their fourth industrial revolution, where AI is at the center, is to get, oh, you need a new cybersecurity software. It's all going to be AI cybersecurity. And then bam, AI is in your systems. And from there, they can expand it however they want. And some of these companies that we'll be getting into that are like this, even shadier than Cyber Reason, believe it or not. I mean, this is where the spooks have been, and this is where they've been working, including the people who were involved in the software side of 9/11, as we'll get to later. So anyway, we approach this challenge of reducing cyber risk by building partnerships and creating a global community that stands stronger together. I mean, this is like, you know, a global effort. This is all about international collaboration. If you look at their members, which we'll do in a second, it's the UK. It's mostly the UK and the US, and then Unit 8200 companies is this alliance. Okay. And some of these companies we've already seen. So who are their founders and funders? Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg, okay, who's openly, by the way, created a data firm literally right after well, not that long ago, actually, after the Transition Integrity Project stuff happened that we'll talk about next time, he set up this data firm to seed this narrative that there's going to be a red mirage, as they're calling it, where it looks like Trump's going to win and Republicans are going to win. And then these mail-in ballots will start to flood in, and then they'll throw it for Biden. And then, of course, the Republicans will be like, that's voter fraud. And that whole narrative, we can thank Bloomberg for that. Remember this when we're talking about all the pre-planned election chaos. Mm-hmm. Bloomberg is a key person there. Anyway, we have the Center for Internet Security we already talked about. City of London Police. Craig Newmark Philanthropies. Weren't we just talking about him? Mm-hmm. That's weird. And who's this? Yeah, the Manhattan DA's office and the Hewlett Foundation, which I'm pretty sure is the Hewlett-Packard people, but not 100% on that. Anyway, Premium Partners. Premium Partners also fund the Global Cyber Alliance. So these are the main funders, and these are the other funders. We have Craig Newmark Philanthropies again. So Craig Newmark has been dumping lots and lots of money into this. Which is interesting. He, has literally been really obsessed with fighting, like crushing independent media. He and Pierre Omidyar of eBay and PayPal, which is why we see PayPal here also, I would argue, have been really at the forefront of these establishment efforts to really quash independent media along with Facebook and Google. Google's not here, but you know they might as well be. Microsoft, MasterCard, who's rolling out their trust stamp digital identity thing for COVID-19 that ties up all your financial activity with whether or not you've gotten enough vaccines. We have a private banking group from the UK, the Hewlett Foundation again, and this is a AI cybersecurity company. I'll just show them to you. So again, they have a fun little timeline that tells you about how they started. Oh, it started when they partnered with PayPal, Yahoo, and Google. Okay, and so we know who's backing them. And then it became JP Morgan, Chase, PayPal, Facebook, and Netflix, and LinkedIn. Okay, so all of these Silicon Valley companies back these people, essentially. They were spun off of Cisco Systems, by the way. Hmm. For people that are interested in them. And look, they're really interested in presidential campaign security.
Shocker.
About nation state attacks.
There was one though, before we go forward. Okay, here, I find very interesting because this is in regard to the internet, right? We're talking about mm-hmm. people who are using their positions to stop fake news, right? That's a really important position. And you could just see how it's, you know, setting it up to be able to control all of these things. I find that to be really interesting. Are you familiar with what this is in regard to domain names and the control? That's a very powerful thing to have influence over the controlling the, because you could think about it like this. If we're talking about people that are censoring your YouTube channel or things like this, this is like a whole nother level of going from like the domain level. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if they have that kind of power.
Ripping the website out by the roots. They did this to Gab.
Exactly.
The social media alternative a couple of years ago, they literally just pulled them out by the domain. Their site was gone. Right. So with this powerful partner, they'd be able to do that to a lot of sites in theory. Anyway, there are other partners. We have a lot of big companies like Adobe. We have health insurance companies like Aetna that are huge. We have healthcare centers. All the things they're saying are going to be hacked. Cars. Remember Cyber Reason talking about hacking cars? We have the car ISAC, the auto ISAC here. Bank of America. Barclays, okay, Broadcom, which owns Symantec, a major cybersecurity company, the European Union, Citibank, CrowdStrike.
Lot.
Remember the people behind the saying that WikiLeaks, their obtaining of the DNC emails and the Podesta emails and all that stuff was Russia? That trustworthy group, not anyway, they're here. Okay, CyberNC is here. I'm not going to talk about this article much, but I wrote about CyberNC in this article, and they are also very deeply tied to Unit 8200, and not good news, not good to see them here. Anyway, a lot of other Deloitte, another company, consulting company mainly, that's been hiring a lot of CIA people in recent years, and they've been popping up with a lot of things we've talked about recently on the show. Let's see. I mean, there's so many companies here.
Yeah.
France's Ministry of Justice, France's National Police are here. Hmm.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
There's many, even like some that may not stand out to people because they, but there's
New
a
York
lot of
again.
Smaller companies in here that are seem very relevant for, that's an incredible list of companies. Like, I bet you we could go through each one of these and find things that would be relevant.
There's totally. Well, I didn't go through all of these. There's just some I know that from my research over the past couple of years, right? The Internet Society. IronNet Cybersecurity, that's former NSA director's Keith Alexander's company that gets a bunch of money from Team 8, who we were talking to earlier. ISACA has a big chapter in Philadelphia that'll be relevant in our next video, probably, because they have a big presence in that particular city. Moving on. I may miss a few. There's some, this is Saudi Arabia. I think it's part of their government.
Lookout is interesting. And there's Metropolitan Police in there too.
Right. Oh, did I miss them?
Right. The blue police. One right in the middle right there.
Oh, right. Michigan's government. Isn't that where Whitmer, right? Isn't she governor of Michigan or is that Minnesota?
I think it was Minnesota. Let me look it up.
Anyway, Martian McLennan is here for people that remember the software side of 9/11,
Michigan,
and all of that stuff.
It was Michigan.
Very interesting to see Martian McLennan here. MITRE Corporation, which was with PTEC and NORAD on 9/11, and are a very shady government contractor that's been sucking up a bunch of your data under the guise of COVID-19. The National Security Institute, we talked about them yesterday. Several cyber reason. Two Cyber Reason employees and one of their main advisors, David Criss, part of this institute alongside people like Keith Alexander, Michael Hayden, former NSA and CIA director, and Paul Wolfowitz, among other spooks and former Pentagon officials that are here. New York's Economic Development Corporation. New York State is all up in here. I mean, obviously Cuomo would be down with this if he gave the keys of the kingdom to Bill Gates and Eric Schmidt already. Palo Alto is a huge company run by Unit 8200 people. PricewaterCoopers, one of the big five auditing firms in the entire world. Here's France's government again. I mean, there is a ton of stuff here. It's pretty wild. RSA is, which is linked to, we talked about them yesterday. Cepio Systems, we also talked about yesterday. Chairman of the board is Tamer Pardo, ex-head of Mossad. Robert Bigman, former CISO at the CIA, who advises Cyber Reason, also is here. This is Canada's Royal Canadian Mounted Police, also part of this global cyber alliance. I mean, this list is huge. Someone should really go through this stuff in more detail. Sophos, Sony, Swiss Internet Security Alliance. I mean, the list is massive. The City UK, which is actually, I think they're the, yeah, here they are. The leading, Britain's most powerful financial lobby group. That's reassuring.
Right. So why would a lobbying group be involved with this, right? I mean, in a global cyber alliance.
Because some of the biggest banksters in the world are backing this.
Well, you can understand why a bank might, taking their narrative at face value that it's about cybersecurity, but a lobbying company, like it just shows you that they're trying to make sure that this gets seen the right way pushed the right way.
Then we have Verizon mentioning them about the 6 gigahertz stuff just a second ago. And the U.S. Secret Service, remember who was simulating? Mm.
Right.
Stuff with Cyber Reason. We talked about DHS already and how that's relevant because of Chris Krebs and CISA and all of this stuff. But the Secret Service was involved in all of those election doomsday simulations. Huh. And here they are, part of this as well. Pretty interesting to see. So anyway, this is the guy that heads Global Cyber Alliance. Anything you want to say before I move to this?
Oh, no. I was just going to say U.S. Bank was at the bottom there as well. The same, just more. I was just looking into the companies.
There's tons of companies we could spend all day talking about this thing. But the point is, these guys are something to pay attention to. Anyway, Philip Rettinger is the president and CEO of the Global Cyber Alliance. In 2009, he was the deputy undersecretary for the National Protection and Programs Directorate and the director of the National Cybersecurity Center at DHS. And he was also the first executive director of the Pentagon Cyber Crime Center.
You know, and just so we're clear, I find that to be just as alarming that we continue to see U.S. government entities or prior entities who are on boards or working with companies that are driving the agendas that are currently being pushed by people that are in that position. You know, like it's just the revolving door idea that we keep seeing in our politics. And then you add the layer of Israeli government or other foreign entities, it just makes it even more alarming. But be understand that these people being in these positions is suspects. You know, that they're making all of this happen from an outside level. It's alarming.
Just like Chris Krebs, before this guy was in these top national security positions for cybersecurity, chief trustworthy infrastructure strategist at Microsoft.
Of course.
And also Sony's senior vice president and chief information security officer. And Andrew Cuomo's cybersecurity advisory board. Wow, Cuomo's been busy, you can tell. He's also a senior associate at the Center for Strategic and International Studies Strategic Technologies Program. You know who else is in this program at CSIS? Nathan Gleicher, who is the head of cybersecurity policy at Facebook. You know, all of those blog posts saying Facebook just unraveled an Iranian disinformation network or a Russian disinformation network. This guy. And he was also, before being at Facebook, on the director of cybersecurity policy at the National Security Council at the White House. And you know who else was on the National Security Council at that time? The guy we talked about yesterday, who co-hosted the Operation Blackout Simulation with Sorry Reason, Ari Schwartz, was also there alongside this guy. And he also used to prosecute cybercrime at the U.S. Department of Justice, right? And now he's at Facebook and he's part of this think tank, which describes themselves as the number one think tank in the U.S. It's worth pointing out one of the top guys at CSIS right now, Dov Zakheim, comptroller of the Pentagon during 9/11, which is important because remember September 10th, 2001? They announced, you know, trillions were missing from the Pentagon's budget. Dov Zakheim was comptroller. It was his job to find it. And then what do you know? The part of the Pentagon that gets hit on 9/11 is the accounting office where they were trying to find all that money.
Yeah. And then we all just forgot about that. And now we're over $20 trillion. And, you know, it's interesting how that works.
And of course, most of this year, we have talked a lot about the Dark Winter Bioterror Simulation in June 2001, which was answering what was then the Johns Hopkins Center for Civilian Biodefense Studies and is now the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. But that exercise was funded by this think tank, CSIS. These guys are shady. So the fact that they're all tied up in this is
unfortunate. It just seems like an intelligence front. I mean, if you got all these people that are essentially... Right. I mean, they're just coming. Like, you have to ask whether that's the point. And this whole thing was set up so people that are currently spooks or spies or whatever you want to call them just end up they're still that. Right. The argument that there's no such thing as former CIA and so on. You know, you wonder whether these people in these positions pretending to be former anything are actually just playing that role.
Right.
You know?
And I just remembered something. So Dov Zakheim, who I just mentioned, who's a big guy here now, is also on the board of directors at the Atlantic Council. And what do you know, Facebook's fact-checking partners are also the Atlantic Council. Maybe it has something to do with like this whole tie-in. I don't know, just a guess. So who's another lady in the same cool program, Denise Zhang, who used to be chief of staff and lead science and engineering technical advisor for DARPA's Plan X. Maybe you haven't heard of Plan X, but it was the secretive Pentagon research program looking to replace human hackers with AI. So AI will just hack you now. So, you know, if there's going to be like a cyber 9/11, it's possible we could actually see that be done by artificial intelligence algorithms, because this Plan X has been, I mean, they've been working on this for years. I mean, it's really crazy.
And remember, half the time when they mention stuff like that, it's because it's not like, oh, we just discovered this. It's because, yeah, we discovered it 10 years ago and now we're using it, but now we're floating it out to you. So you think about it, like that could be what's happening right now is the point.
Right. And so CSIS, I wanted to point out some of the things, this particular program that's tied up in this global cyber alliance and Facebook now and all this stuff, what they're saying, right? What this program, this type of content they put out. So they hosted a thing with this guy that's currently in Congress, Jim Himes, who represents Connecticut. He talks about the importance of creating a better flow of people and information between the intelligence community and the private sector. This could, you know, building a closer relationship with foreign counterparts on research and development. I mean, this is a lot of what the Global Cyber Alliance wants to do. So they say talks about reinforcing innovation units, i.e. giving them more money to the CIA's NQTEL and the intelligence community's equivalent of DARPA, IARPA. To support change, they say. Yikes.
Kind of sounds like the public-private partnership analogy excuse that they're using. Well, and as you said, they're not even proven to actually expedite anything, and they're just saying that.
No, it's Mussolini's definition of fascism, corporatism, where the private and public sectors merge to screw over everyone else, basically. I mean, that's what this is.
Yeah.
And here, right on that point, CSIS was talking about the importance of a robust relationship between the public and private sectors in the area of national security innovation. Just like Eric Schmidt, he's like, let's merge that stuff, you know? Silicon Valley, merge it with the national security state. That's totally normal. No, I mean, that's a recipe for nasty fascism. Anyway, I just wanted to show who funds this crap. The United States government, the T here in the program area is the technology thing we were just looking at. So it's the United States government. Out of the governments, but these are the corporations. A lot of overlap with the global Cyber Alliance, Bank of America, right? Part of the Global Cyber Alliance funds this particular group, Northrop Grumman. I mean, this is, you know, close to $1 million.
What just, were you on the wrong page first? I saw Boeing at the top for a second and then it changed.
Oh, well, I was, it's down here.
Oh, gotcha, sorry, keep going. Boeing's a big point there.
Yeah, so these are the people that fund this think tank, but not all of them fund the technology sector. The CSIS is a big think tank, so they have a lot of different sectors. Like if you actually look on here, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation funnels a ton of money into their like global health think tank area as well, alongside Merck and Gilead and people like that. So, I mean, yeah, they're funded by a bunch of corporations. Specifically oil companies like Chevron, BP. But anyway, I only highlighted the ones that fund the technology program that I just pointed out.
It's interesting to think about the possibility that the money that was taken from you and given to companies under the guise of, you know, stimulus and whatever else could have just been used by these companies to then fund these programs. That's what I found possible. Interesting thought. Yeah.
Possible. Mm-hmm. But we have people funding this IBM. Remember the guy that Cyber Reason hired for their public sector thing, a former high-ranking IBM guy, the current chief information officer of the CIA that worked alongside that guy at Cyber Reason? She was, right before joining the CIA, was a top executive at IBM Federal. And then McAfee, we talked about them earlier because the guy on Cyber Reason's board, Dave DeWalt, used to run them. Raytheon, which of course the Secretary of Defense is a former Raytheon lobbyist. AT&T funding them. I mean, a lot of the same companies. Hewlett-Packard, remember the Hewlett Foundation funding a bunch of this stuff. Intel Corporation, who's very much tied up with the Israeli government. Royal Dutch Shell, like oil companies are funding this stuff. Qualcomm, who we didn't really talk about, but they pop up a little bit. And Verizon. And there's a couple other ones, but I mean, those are the main ones. So I only have one tab, one window left. So we're mostly done. Anything you want to add before I move on?
No, go ahead. I just think that all these points are continuing to build the picture that we're painting along the way, and you're doing an excellent job. So it's very, very
clear. Yeah, well, it's a lot to lay out. So, you know, the idea, I'm sure like a lot of these videos are really dense for some people. The idea is to like lay it all out there, and then we can go about the business of making easier to digest like summary videos. But the idea is to have it all laid out. So when I make a claim, like, I don't know, hey, I think, you know, Cyber Reason's a front for Israeli intelligence, I can refer you to part, you know, the first video we did, and you can see exactly why I think that.
Well, right? On that point, before you get into this next slide, I keep seeing that pop up. And by the way, that's something I constantly get accused of, is, you know, doing too long, or, you know, and that's just, you know, that's something that tends to happen when you're covering so much information. And what I argue is that people out there that go, oh, you need to make these shorter. It's like, look, if you're arguing that we need to break up certain parts, that's one thing. But to argue that we should be fitting in this much information into a 5-minute video is just not possible unless you want to be told what to think. And that's the point. That's it. People that come out and just kind of rattle off what you should be thinking, and you're just taking out the talking points. You're not learning anything. You're not understanding why this is important. And that's the problem with mainstream media and arguably a lot of the independents that do similar stuff. And that's why this is so valuable. Now, we will try to break this stuff up and make smaller parts, but as she's saying, this is a walking you through the information in, I mean, if we're doing three videos now on this thing, let's not pretend like that can be a 15-minute video, you know? And I know people out there understand that. So I just wanted to make sure that was clear. There's a lot here going on.
Yeah, there is a lot here going on. So there's a lot of these different conferences that go on in the U.S. cybersecurity conferences, where basically it's these conferences connect the vendors, the people that pay groups like this, and they bring together people from the private sector and the public sector so that they can market their cybersecurity software, okay? And so this is one, Data Connectors. They've been having cybersecurity. They have different summits around the country, different cities. They had one in Philadelphia this year, but I mean, it's not just Philadelphia, right? I just have this one up because I wanted to point out something about this lady. What's important are their vendors. Agari, who we just pointed out, one of the top funders of Global Cyber Alliance. We also have Cyber Reason. I don't know what this is, but I feel like it just reminds me of Cthulhu and is super creepy in a logo. Anyway, this thing I talked about earlier that was part of Global Cyber Alliance, here's their Philadelphia chapter participating directly. Okay, Dark Trace, who you need to know about these guys. We'll be talking about them in a second. Ultra Shady. Okta, remember CTI League? One of their co-founders is the Okta guy. And RSA, we've talked about them quite a bit, Israel stuff. Tenable, this is Amit Yoren's company. We'll be getting into them in a moment. So anyway, I just wanted to point out this lady because we were talking about, our next video is going to be a lot about Philadelphia. And we talked about, right, how Cyber Reason worked directly with the Secret Service. So I just wanted to point out the lady that's talking, giving this talk in Philadelphia of the Secret Service, and Cyber Reason's one of the sponsors of this thing, because it is kind of interesting to see her history. Mm-hmm. So she has been part of the Secret Service for 20 years. She was part of the protective detail of Bill Clinton after he left office, and she traveled around the world with him in support of the Clinton Global Initiative. Interesting. When you very keep talented. In mind that the Clinton Global Initiative, allegedly it was Jeffrey Epstein that came up with that, and Ghislaine Maxwell was a member of it, right? And you know, it's just odd. So anyway, she's one of the main people at the Secret Service's Philadelphia field office, but you know, I'll bring her up again in the next video. Also, the same one is teamed up with our pals at DHS's CISA and Chris Krebs and all of those guys, giving talks pretty recently about critical incident response. We have yet another group like Data Connectors, but this is the official cybersecurity summit that, if you look here, what they exist to do are exclusive conferences, where they connect senior executives responsible for protecting their company's critical infrastructures with cutting edge technology providers, okay? And by the way, this one, forgot to mention, this one's about connecting the government officials and private sector people, and also like people that protect specific cities with cybersecurity stuff. If you look at the bottom, they have people like the chief information officer of Baltimore and stuff. So it's like cities, and so they're a little different, right? But what's important here are the sponsors. So they had one in Philadelphia, which focuses specifically on executives. And this is public and private sector. I want to stress that, okay? In Pennsylvania, Southern New Jersey, and Delaware, they do this one by regions. They essentially, every single one that they've had this year has the same sponsors. You'll notice some similarities to the last one. Dark Trace, the title sponsor. This is freaky when you find out what Dark Trace is and who's behind it. Then we have Checkpoint, Unit 8200. Amit Yoren's company, we'll talk about Tenable in a second, and Verizon, and what do you know? Once again, it's Okta, RSA, and Cyber Reason.
Wow.
Seems to just be the same people sponsoring the stuff, being like, hey guys, buy our, you know, just going, running all these conferences that are getting their software put on companies and cities and states and the government.
And to the average person? It looks like a bunch of different entities all chiming in and coming to the same conclusion when it's really just these same money people driving it from behind the scenes. It's the analogy for our whole society, it seems.
Now, Philadelphia, a week before the election, had a pretty fancy chief information officer forum. So whereas this one, these guys and the one I showed earlier have stuff around the country. This one was just Philadelphia, okay? So they're interesting when you look at, they had some big names, right? Google's principal economist was here. Anyway, I'm just trying to scroll down so you can look at the sponsors. Okta, Darktrace, and Google
Cloud. Great.
Okay. So this makes it really important to look at who is Darktrace. Their advisory board.
The cloud aspect's really important too, not just Google, but the cloud in general, because remember, we were just talking about how that aspect of having using the cloud storage with all of these things is a common theme I'm noticing.
Yes. Well, I mean, if it's on the cloud, they have access to all of it, don't they?
Yeah, right. So, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And most of these cybersecurity AI people, they all use Amazon's cloud, most of them. Some use Google Cloud, but I mean, it's one or the other, essentially. Or they'll have functionality for Microsoft's, Google's, and Amazon's, which is why you see a lot of those same companies partnering with all these guys, like Carbyne 911 that we talked about yesterday, Microsoft, Google, and Amazon, all partners of those guys. Anyway, so who is Darktrace? Well, this is their CEO and co-founder, Poppy Gustafsson. It's a fun name.
Yeah.
Doesn't she look so friendly? It's like she walked out of a Banana Republic catalog. Oh, I bet she's a real nice lady. Anyway, so this company is just so nuts. I don't even know where to begin. Basically, as you can see here, it was founded in 2013. The founders were leading a team of a world-class, or were leading a, well, they used team twice, so that's not just me reading it wrong. They were leading a world-class team of mathematicians from the University of Cambridge and AI experts who were working on groundbreaking applications of AI, experimenting with giving machines a sense of self.
Yikes.
These guys were trying to make self-aware AI. They were trying to make the singularity. They weren't trying to make a cybersecurity product. They were trying to make self-aware artificial intelligence. Okay, so keep that in mind, because basically what happened, well, first they're saying, this is how they explain what Darktrace is now. So now they say over 4,000 organizations around the world rely on their AI cybersecurity technology, okay, against the backdrop of accelerated digital transformation, we expect this technology to go mainstream. I mean, as you'll see in a second, these guys are all, this AI team trying to make the singularity got in bed with spooks from the UK. And so like they have some foreknowledge probably of some stuff that's coming down the line, and they're saying, we expect our technology to go mainstream because we're experiencing accelerated digital transformation.
Let me ask you this, just to float a thought before you keep going. Think about how the timing, it's very interesting to see they're focusing on the singularity and then just kind of switching over to this. You wonder whether or not something did happen. Right, whether something else, something was achieved that's not really made public, and why people wonder, and I do too, why all of a sudden this whole agenda was just kind of jammed in at once, you know, and you wonder whether something changed, you know, I mean, how is it possible that this kind of worldwide manipulation can take place without something like that? Just a thought to float, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I have things I suspect once we get through what Darktrace is, what may be going on here, because there's definitely some ulterior motive. Because if you're a bunch of researchers at Cambridge or whatever trying to make the singularity, and you're contacted by people from British intelligence, GCHQ, who are frustrated with legacy approaches to security, and that's why they come after you, because you're making the singularity. I mean, clearly they're, I mean, there's something going on here.
Yeah.
Anyway, going back to what Darktrace is, they say that their AI takes action against cyber attacks, and usually that action will be taken without the human in the loop. And In other parts where they talk about Darktrace as opposed to supervised machine learning where there's a human overseeing the AI, Darktrace has no supervision. They let their AI run wild and do what it wants.
Wow.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, here's what their CEO is saying. For us, this is just scratching the surface. We see a future where even higher level thought processes like red teaming and cyber risk analysis could be executed by AI. So what Ohad Zaidenberg is doing, saying we blame Iran, they see a future where all of that will be done by artificial intelligence. That's nice.
Jeez. The Skynet is the limit.
Yeah, pretty much.
Joke. Well, yeah. it's just so crazy that how, you know, this whole thing is something that has, I mean, artificial intelligence as it's at alone and what that could mean is like world changing. So the fact that this stuff is being driven in with this just kind of foggy for your betterment is just incredible. Like as a, and not just Americans, but as a world society. And obviously there are a lot of people speaking out about the dangers of this, but it doesn't seem to be addressed by any actual leaders of the world. And that's pretty, that's telling actually.
Right. So, I mean, these guys are very clearly trying to make the singularity, as you'll see in a second, but basically their official history, right? So these, this world-class team of mathematicians at Cambridge trying to give machines a sense of self, and then they join forces with cyber experts from British intelligence, GCHQ. Okay. Who work with the NSA and Unit 8200 and all that stuff. It's the UK's equivalent of those agencies. Okay. So they say our autonomous response technology is capable of fighting back against attacks at computer speed on behalf of humans. So no humans are involved, but they do it on our behalf. They're our benevolent overlords, I guess. Anyway, they add, most recently, our research and development team have made it possible for our AI to interrogate its own findings. In other words, instead of human beings looking at the outputs of the AI and applying their human understanding, AI is now taking care of this too.
Ooh, that is some chilling stuff.
Their first customer was Drax, one of the UK's largest power providers. They're also on the NHS, the National Healthcare Service of the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom got hit, their NHS got hit by a big hack that they said were cyber criminals, and then Darktrace got smushed onto them and they adopted it. And then Darktrace put out these press releases saying, we stopped the ransomware attacks this time. So we have a proven track record of cybersecurity. And now they're on like a bunch of really critical UK systems. I'm not sure what they're on in the US. But they're clearly making some sort of push, sponsoring all these cybersecurity innovation things. I mean, just really out of control. So anyway, like what I was saying earlier about how they want AI to replace people like Ohad Zaidenberg that say it was Iran, it was Russia, it was China. We are, that she says, last year we were responsible for another world first. The cyber AI analyst, an AI technology which applies contextual understanding to launch a full-blown investigation into a security incident. Today, that AI is detecting the most sophisticated attacks out there, including those from the sophisticated Chinese cyber espionage group, and blah, 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 and even the alleged Russian ransomware gang, Evil Corp. Remember, they're alleged Russian, so, you know, whatever.
The issue with this level of it too, like, you know, our, if we're saying, you know, we're there, singularity hasn't been reached. So you're still, you know, using, it's still based on the data that's being put into it. And so we're being these people behind the scenes, putting in the information that then drives, like they're arguing that if this comes to the conclusion that Iran did it, they're going to use that to be like, well, the AI, you know, that it said it, it's, you know, we can't argue with that, but they're behind the scenes putting in the data that drives that decision, right? And that goes with any kind of model you are talking about, unless you're actually discussing some kind of singularity, which is not this case. So this is easily manipulatable. And they use the misunderstanding of what that kind of artificial intelligence is to manipulate the average person. That's right. That's where I think this will be going, is the, like the, what you're outlining right here will be the next prediction level where people are told the AI discovered this and we just take it at face value. Or like, you're going to be sick tomorrow. Take it at face value. Right.
So these guys, because of what happened in the NHS and what I mentioned about how there was the hack and then Darktrace came on and then they promoted, I mean, here it says it fought back against the WannaCry hack at several NHS trusts. Okay, so they can, after the hospitals are in the US are hacked by Iran, a company like this can say, and look, well, we stopped that type of attack at the NHS and we can do it for you now. And then what do you know? They'll be all over US hospitals. They're creepy, unsupervised AI that is, they're trying to make self-aware, and Skynet, and they're putting on all these critical infrastructure systems. I mean, yikes, dude, this is dangerous.
Yeah.
People should be looking into this company, and I'll show you why. Check out their advisory board. This is where I'm talking about the software side of 9/11. You need to look at some of these people, specifically Alan Wade. We'll get to him in a second. Advisory board, Lord Evans of Weardale, the fun name. Anyway, he was director. Yeah, doesn't he seem friendly? Oh, man. I mean, you know, director general of MI5. Okay, that's like one of the biggest guys in UK intelligence during that period of time, from 2007 to 2013. He was there for 33 years.
Or he's still there.
I don't think he is anymore. I'm implying
the point is that we don't, the people that work in these kind of intelligence communities or intelligence positions, it's an honest question to ask whether or not he actually stopped working for them in 2013. You know what I'm saying? And that's something we pretend like that's just outside.
Well, a lot of these people maintain their ties to intelligence agencies even after they leave, right? So yeah, for sure. So what's interesting about him, he was appointed to the Security Services Management Board of UK Intelligence, right, as Director of International Counterterrorism in 2001, 10 days before 9/11. Remember how the BBC, you know, the state media arm of the UK, reported the towers at the World Trade Center collapsing like 20 minutes before they actually collapsed?
Yep.
And I don't think they ever even actually... You don't think this guy had some sort of like, you know, I mean, look at that appointment.
Yeah. I don't, no one's ever actually like made an intelligent argument for why that's the way they just said, like, she just misspoke. That's the only argument I've ever heard about that. And that's crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, this guy is also a director at HSBC, the bank that's been tied to like money laundering and drug cartels and like a bazillion different crimes. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Professor Nick Jennings from the Imperial College at London, responsible for all the fake models of lockdowns and all that justified lockdowns at the beginning anyway, and all of that stuff. And yeah, that guy, he's the chair in artificial intelligence for those guys. He's also the UK government's current chief scientific advisor for national security. And a member of the UK government's Artificial Intelligence Council, which I'm assuming is similar to the National Security Commission on AI in the US. I'll get to Alan Wade in a second, because that guy is just, whoa, dude. You'll see why. Amber Rudd had three different cabinet or ministerial roles in the UK government over 4 years under three prime ministers, including being Home Secretary, overseeing the UK's response to terror attacks, and was involved in a international industry-led, private sector-led, response to removing radicalizing material on the internet, which endures, which is still around, the Global Internet Forum to Counter Terrorism, so censoring speech. A senior advisor to Teneo. If you don't know what Teneo is the consulting firm run by Doug Band, the Clinton family bagman that went on a bunch of flights on Jeffrey Epstein's plane with Bill Clinton. And you know who else is a big guy at Teneo these days? Jerome Hauer, a key 9/11 suspect involved in the Dark Winter simulation, and a current board member on the board of directors of Emergent BioSolutions. You should go and read the article at Killer Enterprise and thelastamericanvagabond.com if you want to know more about Jerome Hauer. And then we have this guy, Dr. Mike Lynch. I won't go into him too much, but he describes himself as Britain's most established technology entrepreneur and the UK's answer to Bill Gates. So he's clearly a great guy. He's actually in a bunch of legal trouble, actually, so much so that Goldman Sachs declined to invest in Darktrace when they went public, because this guy is like, has made a lot of bad deals. Anyway, doesn't matter, I guess. He's in bed with the spooks, the right spooks. Anyway, Alan Wade. Alan Wade is the only American here. He had a 35 career in the Central Intelligence Agency, including alongside Robert Bigman. Right. So Robert Bigman, the Cyber Reason Advisor, Chief Information Security Officer at the CIA, while Alan Wade was Chief Information Officer at the CIA. Yes, that means they worked closely together. And this is, you know, they're involved with these AI cybersecurity companies now. That should tell you something about where these guys see things going. Okay. So there is a lot that they leave out of Alan Wade in this tiny little bio. There's a lot they don't tell you. So what I'm going to go into now was, hopefully I'll get to it at some point. It was supposed to be in my series about the Maxwell family, Ghislaine Maxwell, Robert Maxwell, the twin sisters, the brothers, all of this stuff, because Alan Wade co-founded a company with Christine Maxwell. I wrote about in the first part of that series how Christine Maxwell was put in charge of the front company selling the bugged promise software that had a backdoor for Israeli intelligence. Robert Maxwell, an Israeli spy, sold that software to sensitive U.S. laboratories through a front company based in California that Christine Maxwell was put in charge of, okay? So Alan Wade, while he's an active CIA officer, creates a company with Christine Maxwell. Right after Christine Maxwell and Isabel Maxwell, her twin sister, and Ghislaine had a stake in this company too, sell their previous internet company, Magellan, which had ties with Microsoft and Bill Gates and all this stuff. I'll put the link to that article in the show notes. But Kiliad, the company Christine Maxwell and Alan Wade founded together, described as the company that solved 9/11 after the fact, by connecting the dots that couldn't be connected because of the failure of imagination problem.
Oh, that aged horribly.
Well, here's the thing. Kiliad was created before 9/11, a couple years before 9/11. And then they claim, being influenced by the Challenger disaster in 9/11, they started retooling or adapting their company to create the best counterterrorism software that would connect all the dots.
I just argue that anybody connected the dots of the 9/11 story in this field is a joke. That's what I mean. Like, looking back. The whole report is.
The official story of 9/11, right, is the real conspiracy theory.
Right.
So for that means, you know, this software then created like a totally ludicrous conspiracy theory. But I mean, this is their sales pitch, right? We solved 9/11. Like, we're the answer and we'll prevent it from happening again. So use us on all of your stuff. And so Kiliad, despite being founded by Alan Wade and Christine Maxwell, who was involved in one of the biggest software spies, probably the biggest at that point, software spy scandals in U.S. history, okay, their company is put on all these databases after 9/11. I'll read a little bit from here really quick. Kiliad's founders, Christine Maxwell, Alan Wade, and another guy whose name I'm forgetting. Sorry, you know, it's been like the Epstein stuff I had to sort of put on the back burner for a little bit, you know, because there's a lot of other stuff going on, obviously. Anyway, Kiliad's founders were influenced by the space shuttle Challenger disaster and the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Investigations into both events concluded that information stored in incompatible databases and documents maintained by different departments and organizations could have allowed managers and officials to prevent those disasters. Because basically after 9/11, the intelligence community, including the CIA and other groups, said that the reason 9/11 happened was because not all of the national security databases were linked. And so they pushed after 9/11 to remove the quote unquote firewalls between different departments, essentially giving, you know, groups like the CIA access to all of the databases of all of the different parts of the national security state and beyond. Right. So,
which really could be seen as the first part of what's happening today too, like the extension,
it's an extension of it.
Ongoing plan to, yeah. I mean, it's very clear. I mean, who knows if that's actually the case, but it's clear that they're trying to achieve the same things today, just at a different level.
Right. Right. So efforts to solve this problem, the connecting the dots problem. Oh, sorry. I missed a sentence. But there was simply no existing technology to connect the dots across so many incompatible systems and organizations. Efforts to solve this problem hastened development efforts within Kiliad, allegedly immediately after 9/11, but it seems like they had it set up before then, because this company was set up like tailor-made for this before 9/11, not unlike Carbine 911 that's ready to ride to the rescue after whatever is going to happen in the 911 call centers and all this stuff. I mean, Kiliad was like a company just like that, but for 9/11, right? So anyway, efforts to solve this problem hastened their efforts at Kiliad and drove the first deployment of Kiliad software within the U.S. intelligence community to create a virtual knowledge environment across distributed information, stovepipes, databases, and applications. It's worth pointing out, this is essentially what Promise did, the Promise software tried to do. Kiliad was an updated version of that. Alan Wade later becomes involved in the creation from the CIA side of the successor to Kiliad, today called Palantir, which we've talked a lot about. Yes, Alan Wade himself, before he left in 2005, was involved in the CIA rise, really, of Palantir, because Palantir, for its first 3 years of existence as a company, worked directly with the CIA. The CIA was their only client. They visited Langley, Virginia on a regular basis to receive feedback from CIA officials who guided the development of that software. And Alan Wade was one of those officials until he left because he was chief information officer of the CIA. So this is the guy that connects Promise to Palantir. This guy, along with Christine Maxwell. I mean, wow.
Yeah, that is very, very. That's a very important connection. I mean, it's so many of the things. Here's something that popped into my head that I think is interesting in the analogy with we're talking about the CIA and everything else. That remember that that I would think speaks to that this is something that's been a general agenda that's been here much longer than even this 9/11, COVID-19. That remember that the way that the federal government was justified was suggesting that, well, criminals just run to the other state and then we can't track them down anymore. It's the same exact argument all the way back then that we need more control across state lines because these people just jump, whether that was even a legitimate argument then. So now we're at the point where they're going, well, now we have all this, but now they, you know, the firewalls between the information we're trying to send. Well, now it's the same argument, right? And it even ties back to Hoover and the CIA and the same exact thing. So you wonder whether or not this has always been the same agenda that's just evolved because of technology's evolution. It's an interesting point.
Yeah, well, keep that in mind when we get to what Kiliad was doing in its later years before it folded. But I just wanted to point out really quick that Kiliad was, you know, used by the FBI, the Office of Director of National Intelligence. They were promoted by the 9/11 Commission. Okay, and then they were on the databases of DHS, the CIA, NSA, and the Pentagon, also the FBI, their counterterrorism database and task force run by Kiliad, tied up with the Maxwell family, man. I don't know. You know how it's weird that we haven't seen any pictures ever of Ghislaine Maxwell supposedly in prison?
Right.
Her sister seemed to have been pretty powerful, as a lot of other people in her family. I guess, no, we're not going to pay attention to them. Anyway, this is just an article pointing out how Alan Wade, chairman of the board of Kiliad, they brought in Christine Maxwell as a temporary CEO in 2013. But what's interesting here is that not long after this, Kiliad ended up folding. They're not around anymore. Okay. But Alan Wade was the chairman of the board of Kiliad, even while he was at the CIA and after he left. Remember, 2013, the year Kiliad folded, is the year Darktrace was founded, okay? But Kiliad, right before it was going out, it decided to fold, focusing on the healthcare market, interesting, with an innovative solution offered in partnership. They were doing intelligent search and information extraction for healthcare, and focused on penetrating the government market. And all this stuff. But they were making a push into healthcare around this time when a lot of the companies we're talking about now, like Cyberese in 2012, Darktrace 2013, a lot of these started popping up in this period. They clearly moved from one phase of companies to another one, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we've also talked on the show before about total information awareness and how that discredited surveillance effort of the American people. And everything they do and all of their data was, you know, dismantled because of public pushback, because it was going to, as the mainstream media even admitted, eliminate privacy for every American citizen. But it's worth pointing out why General Poindexter, who was the guy essentially behind and driving total information awareness, when he was going around to the different bigwigs in the national security state and trying to build this thing, Alan Wade, you can see him here, very involved in that group. And what's worth pointing out here, this is from The Watchers, a book about the rise of America's surveillance state. If you want to go check this out, this is just an excerpt from Google Books to show you guys, right? But this is about Wade liking the idea of total information awareness because he thinks it would protect privacy. I mean, what a joke. But this is like his PR spin on why he liked total information awareness. But anyway, what it says
Washington
here.
Move to the, yeah. Ron Paul points it out all the time. You know, the Patriot Act has nothing to do with being patriotic. It's a classic ploy.
Right. So anyway, what's key here, Alan Wade and Poindexter had several more meetings, and the agency, the CIA, installed a node on the TIA network, meaning Alan Wade was the guy. Remember how I don't want to go too much into total information awareness, but it was run by DARPA, but they had collaborations with different intelligence agencies. Anyway, the guy, the point man for total information awareness at the CIA was Alan Wade. Okay. So Alan Wade is an important guy, and the fact that he's involved with this company right now is something we should not ignore, especially considering some of the other people here. Okay. So that was kind of a mouthful to explain. Anyway, now we're at Amit Yoren, who I've been teasing a little bit. Okay. Because remember, go back here, for example, you know, we have Dark Trace at the top. We have Tenable. Okay. This is Amit Yoren's new company. Amit Yoren used to be president of RSA. This is his official bio. You'll see that it doesn't have everything about Amit Yoren in here, as we'll see in a moment. I had to piece together some different biographies, including some old ones. So he used to be head of RSA. We've talked about them being a major Israel-based, been around one of the earliest cybersecurity companies ever, based out of Israel, has ties to their national security state. He was involved with the Department of Homeland Security. He doesn't describe his whole position here, but here's Amit Yoren again, resigning in 2004, the same year that total information awareness was also dismantled. Anyway, he was director of the National Cybersecurity Division at DHS that was created immediately after 9/11. Amit Yoren was put in that position, even though he is not a U.S. citizen. He is an Israeli citizen. He studied at West Point. But he was put there in this powerful position.
That's crazy.
After 9/11. Yep. So this talks about how he left his post abruptly. He got, I'm not exactly sure why he left. Maybe someone that is watching this has more information on that than me. Here is another bio of his talking about RSA owned by Dell now. Anyway. At the U.S. Department of Defense, National Cybersecurity Director for DHS, was involved in a company called IBM Security Guardian. Here we have another bio of Amit Yoren without a picture. It's from Market Screener. CEO and advisor to NQTEL of the CIA. What do you know? And previously at Symantec, a major antivirus thing. So on the board of Guardium, before the previous bio said IBM Guardium, Guardium was a separate company set up by Israeli intelligence officials that was acquired by IBM in 2009. Remember, IBM talked about their CIA ties a little bit ago. IBM's very involved with these intelligence agencies. Here's a press release about IBM buying Guardium. I'm not going to go too much into that. But Guardium is important because of this guy, Michael Goff. Again, if you want more information on him, Christopher Berlin really did a number on this guy in PTEC, which if you don't know what PTEC is, just so this video doesn't turn out to be super long, please go and watch James Corbett's very excellent video or listen to it in podcast form, PTEC and the 9/11 software. As you can see here, at the time of 9/11, even though it turned out to have direct links to terrorist financing, including people that the U.S. government, per the official narrative, were involved in, you know, related to 9/11, and also had conflicts of interest with people on the 9/11 Commission, among other things, PTEC's clients included the CIA, the FBI, the White House, the Department of Energy, the Air Force, the Navy, the Federal Aviation Authority, IBM, and Enron, okay, all at the time. That 9/11 was going on. After 9/11, it was raided. PTEC was raided by federal authorities. So anyway, who is Michael Goff and why does PTEC, how does PTEC relate to him? We'll go down here. PTEC is believed, if you watch the videos on it, to have had some sort of backdoor or been involved in the software side of 9/11, sabotaging key systems. At the time the attacks were taking place in order to allow those attacks to happen and prevent the normal defenses that would have prevented them from happening, including NORAD, among others, from actually taking place. So who wrote that software? Michael Goff wrote that software. So even though he lists himself as marketing manager, he says when he was at PTEC, He handled the design, deployment, and management of all of its Windows and Macintosh data and voice networks, and basically did he managed a bunch of stuff for the IT company on that side. Okay, and immediately after leaving PTEC, he had Goff Communications. Here's an archived version of his site. Guardium, Amit Yoren's company.
See, it's connections like this that make it so obvious that the so-called investigation after 9/11 was so ridiculous. That's why you've actually listened to some of these other detectives or researchers have spoke out. It's like, that's a painfully obvious, like at least the question about whether or not this one individual could have been responsible for why NORAD wasn't able to, there's questions like that that just aren't addressed. And of course, because you have these ties to groups that might have had an influence or a drive or a profit motive to make that happen, but no, wasn't even addressed because they're above reproach because they're tied to the intelligence community.
Right. So, Guardium being tied up with Israeli intelligence, this guy doing the PTEC software and then representing Guardium, Amit Yoren is helping run Guardium. And then he gets put in that top position at DHS, even though he's not an American citizen.
It's incredible. I don't even know if that's, can you think of any other country that's going to put a foreign citizen in a position?
No, no, I can't. Tenable, Amit Yoren's company, his current company. Before I go any farther, though, amazing what happens when you do a where are they now with people that were involved or, had conveniently profited or benefited from 9/11. Amit Yoren hosted this company, this was last year, hosted a very exclusive invite-only business event for IT executives in Philadelphia. This is around the same time the current, we'll talk about him later in the next video, the director of the Office of Emergency Management of Philadelphia, he was put into place right after this. And that may be related once you see the ties of that director to people like Michael Chertoff, among others, but that's in an upcoming video. Don't want to get ahead of myself. Anyway, Tenable, Amit Yoren's company, was contacted by the Center for Internet Security, remember them, Global Cyber Alliance. Amit Yoren's on their board. They teamed up very recently to bolster cyber hygiene, whatever that means, for the public and private sectors right before the election. And this is important because it's directly involved here. The Elections Infrastructure Information Sharing and Analysis Center is now running Tenable software, as is the Multi-State Information Sharing and Analysis Center, which are directly involved, both of those, in the cybersecurity in protection of these critical networks, one's election infrastructure and one's like multi-state information sharing about cyber threats. Okay, so they're running Tenable software, they're running Amit Yoren software right now, and this happened on October 7th, 2020, pretty recently. Okay, that's like right after that FCC ruling and all this stuff. A lot has been happening in early October.
This cyber hygiene is really interesting. That stood out to me for some reason. One, because it's something I've never heard of, but it's interesting. It says that it's a reference to the practices and steps that users of computers and other devices take to maintain system health and improve online security. So I argue it's probably, the steps in which you take to access things online and so on. So, you know what I mean? It's a control mechanism is what it sounds like.
Right. So even crazier than that, August 7th, 2020, the vice president for operational technology at Tenable, Amit Yoren's company, Marty Edwards, appointed industry co-chair of the Control Systems Interagency Working Group to promote and advance operational technology security across the public and private sectors. By the way, I showed this on a previous video, not the election stuff, but the head of NSA Cybersecurity Directorate, Ann Neuberger, the one whose husband is on the board of APAC. Anyway, in that article, she's talking about how OT, the OT parts of the national security state, are the most vulnerable to hacks ahead of the election. So this is why this is important. Okay. Here we go. It's CISA again. Okay. The CISA is excited to announce Marty Edwards. Marty Edwards of Tenable, Amit Yoren's company, is now industry co-chair of CISA's Control Systems Interagency Working Group. In a statement issued by Assistant Director for Cybersecurity at CISA, Brian Ware, along with our government co-chair, Rick Driggers, who works at CISA, Marty will be critical in advancing this forum's efforts for coherent, coordinated, and enhanced collaboration and information sharing across the federal government, industry, and academia. Wow. Okay. The appointment comes on the heels of a joint advisory from CISA and the NSA, which warned of ongoing malicious activity targeting critical infrastructure through internet accessible OT assets, just like I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. Ann Nurnberger, Chris Krebs, the Microsoft guy, the lady who's married to the AIPAC guy whose parents were rescued by Netanyahu's brother, you know, and then they hire Amit Yoren's vice president at Tenable to be the industry chair of this. Right after they're saying bad things are going to happen to the very stuff they're putting this Tenable guy in charge of.
With all the positions that you've pointed out and all the people tied back to the different government entities, this would not be that difficult to drive forward. Right. That's what right. It's not, you know, there's some massive, I mean, it really is a massive conspiracy if you believe what we're showing you here, but it wouldn't be that difficult to achieve. That's what's so incredible by looking at all this, because you're really just putting money in certain places, floating narratives on the media, and they have all the little mechanisms behind all these companies that they've been setting up over decades, you know?
They're essentially telling you these cyber attacks are going to happen, and they've been telling you for over a year, and as we get closer to the event around the election, they say it's going to happen. It's like every day, like the hospital stuff. Mm-hmm. They were warning about this last year, and now they're saying, oh, they issue a warning. And now they're like, oh, right before the election and the second wave's hitting and there's all these cyber attacks attacking hospitals. And as we showed, all the people they're citing are either people funded by the CIA and Google or people tied up with Microsoft. Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, after announcing this, okay, the cyber hygiene, whatever, and then announcing that their guy is now on the board, the guy is now on the board with CISA, they come out and they say, Tenable does, state-sponsored actors from Russia and China are leveraging several of the same publicly known vulnerabilities in their attacks, and all of which have patches available that Tenable has conveniently created. So on October 20th of this year, the NSA published Ann Nurnberger, again, the AIPAC lady, okay, published a detailed security advisory to inform people about Chinese state-sponsored cyber actors exploiting known vulnerabilities. 2 days later, CISA published an advisory saying you have to patch these things because the Chinese and the Russians will come for your systems. And who creates the patches? Tenable does, and you can download them all here to keep yourself safe from the stuff that the NSA and CISA said you're vulnerable to. I mean, can you imagine how many, like, I don't know, things in at the city, in the state level, or in the private sector installed these patches, not knowing all of these intelligence ties, and we're like, well, the NSA and DHS say we have to do it, and they're saying, the media is saying we're going to be hacked all the time, so we really need to download Tenable's plugin. So that's all I have for today. Well,
I was just looking at this
because this is wild in and of itself.
I was just quickly searching just to see if anything popped up before, you know, all breaking news just happened again. But I didn't, just to your point, it's think about how ridiculous it is that all of these that's the ones I have up right here. These are all just happening. It's the same stuff you were mentioning though. But what's interesting is that you made it clear that these are based on very, very flimsy claims from people have obvious motives. Mm-hmm. And look at the media. Every single look. I mean, you could go on page after page after page. And here's what I just saw. There was like it's just like a medical site. You know, why are hackers targeting hospitals? Referral MD. You know, it's like everybody is driving the narrative based on this insinuation. It's just how people can't see how coordinated this stuff is. I have no idea. that, you know, your work is helping people, I argue, that even are as lost as you might think watching mainstream media, because it's, I mean, you have to choose not to see how this is coming together. It's that clear.
Well, you know, like we said last time, before 9/11, there were companies or organizations that were set up before 9/11, knowing, among other things, you know, most of the examples that I pointed out are that they knew that some sort of DHS, it was previously going to be NHSA, the National Homeland Security Agency, they knew something like that was going to happen and be rammed through, despite such a, the creation of such a department being unpopular. And so they were created and set up before September 2001, and then that event happened, and then they rush in, just like Gilead, for example, that we talked about today, comes in, and they're like, well, the problem that the intelligence community and these people officially say caused 9/11, we will fix, right? And, you know, we have companies like Carbine 911, we have companies like Darktrace, like Cyber Reason, like Tenable, all of these different companies seeking to come in and take over. And this is also true for the tech giants, also censoring speech right now, like Google, which has their life sciences division, which, you know, in the event of a major hospital hack, not unlike Microsoft's healthcare division, stand to profit enormously from this, especially because of their existing contracts, which are massive with the US government. I mean, it wouldn't take much for HHS to be like, come in and protect our hospitals. Right. You know, they've already invited Palantir to essentially guide a lot of Operation Warp Speed and their COVID-19 response. So why not just open that up to even more, especially when we're having Google and the Pentagon already openly partner up on healthcare initiatives. You know, a lot of these ready-made solutions that people would not normally accept, you know, having telehealth and not being able to see a human doctor ever again is not something people in the US actually want. But if you look at what people like Eric Schmidt envision for the future of healthcare, you know, they have a particular agenda they're trying to ram through. And how do you get people to ask for, you know, well, you know, it's the problem reaction solution setup, right? You want to offer something that you know will not be accepted. So you create a problem and then you offer what you wanted implemented in the first place as the solution to the problem you have created in order to get people to end up begging for it or asking for it. And, you know, it appears like we have all the pieces of a situation just like that set up ready to go. But it's worth pointing out that beyond that, there is, as we pointed out, an effort to blame a particular state actor for a lot of these things that are going on, a particular focus on Iran, but also China, Russia. I mean, we could see a push for war from this, which is very alarming and obviously has huge implications. Can you imagine the US getting involved in a war with Iran right now? How that would exacerbate things that are going on right now related to government policy in relation to the COVID-19 crisis. I mean, we really need to be paying attention to this. And that's why, as I said before, it's important to get this information out there now, because after the election, we do not know what is going to happen with the flow of information on the internet. The internet is going to be targeted. Yes, there are alternative platforms that are not controlled by Silicon Valley. But, you know, as we pointed out, the Global Cyber Alliance, you have ICANN there. They could just rip a site out from the roots. You know, so, you know, we don't really know what's going to happen in terms of the internet. So it's really important to get this information out now and show that there is a setup for countries that the national security states of the US and Israel, you know, they want there to be a war, apparently. And this seems like, you know, the cyber 9/11 may be the justification for that. It's worth pointing out, too, as I pointed out before, the Vault 7 leaks from WikiLeaks showed that U.S. intelligence and presumably other intelligence agencies that are allied with the CIA are capable of conducting cyber attacks and then putting fingerprints of other nation states in order to make it look like a different government conducted the attack, even though it was actually the CIA. And to think that other countries like Israel don't have their own version of that is very naive, considering how far developed the Israeli tech scene is and the tech apparatus of Israel's intelligence arms, right? So we need to keep that in mind. it's worth pointing out that I point this out in part three of my Cyber Reason series, and some of these hacks that have been attributed to Iran in the past by companies like Microsoft, they say Shamoon is what they call it, an alleged Iranian hacking protocol or whatever, was used, and therefore it's Iran. One of the fingerprints in the Vault 7's release was Shamoon, right? So, I mean, we need to really be questioning what's going on here, because there's obviously a lot of ulterior motives at play by the same people that brought you, that had some sort of involvement with the software side of 9/11. I mean, we really can't ignore this. And so, you know, I tend to not want to report on things before they happen, but just because of the situation, the censorship we might be seeing, it's really important to have this out there before there's any sort of clampdown. You know, it's better to be on the safe side, because mainstream media obviously isn't going to ask these questions about a cyber attack. Okay. I mean, look at their track record so far. We laid it all out earlier. Yeah.
And as always, even to the frustration of some people, weirdly enough, we're not telling you how to think. You know, we are clearly suggesting, I think it's very apparent what's happening, but we don't know for a matter of fact. We're simply, and predominantly Whitney's research is simply laying out for you the facts and the evolution of this and the ties between people. We have our opinions, but the point is for you out there to think for yourself. And that's her point, is this information needs to be seen and discussed and argued and debated, but that's not what happens today in mainstream spheres, or whether it's health or foreign policy. You get one narrative and you get told to shut up if you say anything else, and you get censored if you say anything else. And that's why this information is so very important. And as she's pointing out, the problem reaction solution, something that is second, it's common knowledge to people like us in this field, but some people still haven't understood this classic kind of Bernaysian manipulation of propaganda and how it's used to influence your position. And the most important part right now is the reaction part of that, which is fear, right? They give you the problem, then they let you react to it. And that's what they need. They need our fear and our confusion and our desperation to then give us the solution, which was, as Whitney pointed out, the point to begin with. And if we're not scared of the illusion, then as she pointed out also, that these are things that we wouldn't normally allow. So they're using all this hype and manipulation and scare tactics to get us to go along with these agendas. And that's why they're seeding this narrative from years before it even gets here, and then calling us conspiracy theorists when we point to them seeding that information, right? Even though they're doing the same thing. You know, it's just so funny and how obvious it is that this is something building. And we need to be aware of that and be ready to not just jump down the first rabbit hole that they show us, which arguably everyone lost in the two-party paradigm will be doing in their respective holes the moment this starts, you know, and that's why we need to wake as many people up as possible before that happens. So
yeah, and I just wanted to point out too, I remember back like most recently in January with the Soleimani assassination, but also in years prior when there appeared to have been efforts to push the U.S. into war with Iran, independent media was on the ball with that, and they were paying attention and saying, no, we don't want war with Iran, okay, but we're about to face this election, right? It's super contentious. A lot of people in independent media are not focusing on this, but I really would urge, if you're watching and you know a content creator in independent media that was sounding the alarm about potential for war with Iran, okay, whether it was in January or a year or two prior, show them this video, or at the very least, show them some of this information and be like, it looks like that push may be coming soon and we need to start paying attention. Okay. I mean, this is really important to get this info out there, ideally before it happens, because what they're going to do, just like a lot of these other events, as soon as it happens, they're going to roll out people on TV and they're going to be like, it was Iran, it was China, before there can be any investigation. And a lot of people, unfortunately, that watch that coverage because of, you know, the trauma, they're impacted by the fear and the images they're seeing on TV or whatever, you know, they're going to be really receptive to that. And the best thing we can do is preempt that narrative as much as possible. And that's, you know, really why we're doing this.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. No, unless you have anything else, I think tomorrow mm-hmm. we're going to be getting into specifically Pennsylvania. And I think how this mm-hmm. is being, I mean, the whole thing we're talking about, that they're with predicted programming, they're guiding us into this, but it's weird how focused Pennsylvania has become, as Whitney's been pointing out. And it's, so we're going to be go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, they're specifically focused on Philadelphia, as we'll be seeing next time. And I mean, even before We do the video. I mean, if you want to go for yourself on like a news database search, even if it's Google News or something similar or whatever, just search for the term ground zero in quotes in Philadelphia. You're going to see a ton of stories just from the past month, just about this election. There is this effort to seed, just like we're seeing them seeding this narrative that there's going to be these huge cyber attacks and all of this stuff, all of these terms for Philadelphia, calling it ground zero, the epicenter of 2020 election chaos, that it's in the center of the bullseye. And these aren't just like one guy or a couple of guys saying that one thing once and being quoted repeatedly by different outlets, both in international and local media. These are different experts being quoted by mainstream media, all apparently using the same buzzwords in a very coordinated way. It's very eerie when you consider things like we showed in the last episode or the first show that, we have DHS officials saying we're on the doorstep of another 9/11. And then they're, right before this very contentious event where all these things seem to be converging and coming together, they're calling Philadelphia ground zero. It's just a really weird term to use, because a lot of those articles where they use that term ground zero, they're talking about voting counts. But some of those articles, as we'll show next time, even when they're talking about, worries about counting mail-in votes and voter fraud or whatever it is, they're showing pictures of like meteors hitting Pennsylvania being on fire. A lot of that stuff doesn't make a lot of sense, but if you have ever studied predictive programming in 9/11 or things like that, it's definitely something that you should pay attention to. And obviously there's a lot more that we're going to be getting into than just the media narrative seeding, but it's something that you can look into and maybe explore for yourselves between now and the next video, if you're interested.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll be getting into it just to reference what you're saying here. We're seeing things like this, where it's just unbelievable. It's just, you're all going to die kind of writing, which makes no sense, as well as the fact that we're continuing to see these kind of things as she's referencing,
ground zero mentions and battleground states specifically. It's weird.
Mm-hmm. Which, just to your point, it's clearly meant, I mean, and this is painfully obvious, to draw your mind to 9/11, which is the whole point of all this, is the insinuation that this is the next new 9/11, and what I found so ridiculous, which we'll talk about tomorrow, is that CNN predominantly writes these things as this is the ground zero of something that has yet to happen. I mean, that's just bad language, bad writing. It's like that's like something I would correct a sixth grader on. No. Here's how you write that. It's like they're clearly trying to get you to think that it's already there, even though it hasn't happened yet. And that's just incredible. So we'll get into all of that tomorrow and plenty more. So thank you, Whitney. And, it's such an important conversation. Anything else you want to leave for us before we take off?
No, I think I have said plenty today.
All right. Well, thank you everybody for being here, and we'll be getting more information out very soon. So as always, question everything, come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Every counterterrorism professional I speak to in the federal government and overseas feels like we are at the doorstep of another 9/11, maybe not something that catastrophic in terms of the visual or the numbers, but that we can see it building and we don't quite know how to stop it.